Thank you, Mr. Winter. Good morning. It is 9 o'clock, December the 5th. I'd like to call the Board of Technical Registrations to session. Mr. Weber, can you do a roll call, please?
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Mr. Pleka?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Ms. Plett?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Present.
Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell? Ms. Hovig?
Present.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Bohol? Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Okay, this is our call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38-43101H, board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone wishing to address the board during this call of the public? Kurt, do we have anybody online that wishes to address the board?
I wish to address the board. I don't believe it. Are we called up by case or do we just...
Please identify yourself.
Hi, Brian Neal.
I believe Mr. Neal is on a later agenda item, and so he wouldn't need to speak at this time unless he has something for the...
Oh, no, I apologize then. So you will call on me.
Yeah, when the case comes up for discussion, thank you.
Okay, sir.
Okay, if there are no others, we will move on to the adoption of minutes.
I may apologize, Chairman. I believe that Mr. Moore has just entered the meeting, and I believe he might have a wish to speak during the comments period.
Okay, Mr. Lohr, I believe, can you identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Christoph Lohr, PE registered in Arizona. I'm an employee of IAPMO, which involves uniform codes, but I'm actually here on behalf of the American Society of Plumbing Engineers.
Hold on, please.
Can we
turn this down a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, we had a volume issue here. Okay, let's try that again. Thank you.
Sure. So my name is Christoph Lohr. I'm a professional engineer registered in Arizona. Actually, my home state is here in Arizona. I'm calling from my home here in Phoenix. Worth noting is I am an employee of the International Association of Plumbing Mechanical Officials. We develop the uniform codes. But I'm actually here as a volunteer representative for the American Society of Plumbing Engineers Phoenix chapter, and along with the Pipe Trust of Arizona, the Medical Gas Committee. I was advised to come to during the public call just to kind of make mention of some new rules regarding medical gas systems. And I wanted to hopefully help maybe provide some education on the City of Phoenix special inspection form and how it could potentially be impacted by some of the new rules of NFPA 99, which is the medical gas code, our healthcare code. And particularly, there's some requirements as it relates to the signing and sealing of the special inspection form that I think the board needs to be made aware of if they are already not so made aware of in terms of what's going on in the Phoenix metro area. So wanted to just try to provide some education and some information for the board at a future meeting. If they so choose to maybe help close the loop on signing and sealing practices in regards to medical gas systems.
Mr. Moore, appreciate you calling in. Thank you. I suspect that will be of interest, and I encourage you to stay in touch with the staff, and maybe we can get this onto a future agenda.
Excellent. Will do.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the adoption of minutes. Board, we've got two sets of minutes for November 7th and November 15th. Is there any discussion on these minutes? Otherwise, I can accept a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to adopt and approve the November 7th, 2023 board meeting minutes and the November 15th virtual board meeting minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. All those in favor of adopting the minutes, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Did I miss anybody? I think that's everybody. Okay. Thank you. Those minutes are approved. Okay. I'd like to move on to, if I can request the indulgence of the board, I'd like to take one case early. This is item 8B2. We have a request from the respondent to deal with this early. This is a virtual call-in. Mr. Phillips, are you online? Phillips?
I can give him a call.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Mr. Phillips, thanks for calling in.
Sure.
Mr. Aiden, are you online as well?
Good morning. Can you hear me, board members?
Yes. Can you give the board a synopsis of this complaint?
And the lender is also online. I've seen Mr. Bruce also, Mr. Richardson.
That's right.
Okay, yes. This is case HI23-023. On January 23rd, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Prescott, Arizona, on or about December 23rd, 2022, inaccurately reported the cracks in the concrete slab, inaccurately reported the small cracks between the windows and wall caulk joints, and some cracked tiles. It is also alleged that the respondent reported that the home had structural issues and recommended a structural engineer needed to be contacted, even though the home was built 3 years prior. Board staff noticed alleged and respondent referenced this complaint in multiple interview regarding allegations. Board staff prepared and sent this case to Stephen Von Aaron Crook, home inspector report assessor, for assessment. Board staff received a completed assessment from Mr. Von Aaron Crook. Mr. Von Aaron Crook assessed that the foundation was reported to be a post-tension slab, and the report photos indicate that there has been significant movement and cracking. Mr. Von Aaron Crook assessed the cracks and especially gaps in windows, beams, etc., are normally superficial or non-existent in post-tension homes. Mr. Von Aaron Crook said that he believed the alleged complaint was unwarranted and that the inspector was correct in his assessment of the structure and recommendation for further evaluation by contractors and a structural error. However, Mr. Von Aaron Crook did identify 8 additional deficiencies. A copy of the assessment was forwarded to the respondent. This investigation has resulted in a conclusion that respondent may have violated board statute and that respondent may have failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of practice for home inspectors. The recommendation is a letter of concern due to the de minimis nature of the reported deficiencies found through the home inspector's report assessment. That's my conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Mr. Richardson, Bruce Richardson, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, this is your chance to share your position on this. I want to give you just a few minutes to give us a summary.
Okay. Basically, when I received the report, I started going around the house looking to see what the inspector had noted, and I could not see more than half of the things that he put in his report. I have a relative who is an inspector in Northern Illinois and called him and told him my findings. And he said, if any of those photos are not line of sight, they are inappropriate for any kind of report. And most of those photos are not line of sight, which is my biggest concern, along with the conclusions that were drawn based on those photos.
Thank you for sharing your position on that. We have an evaluation that supported the presence of the cracking.
Yeah.
But our our reviewer, case assessor, did notice 8 other deficiencies. So that's really the basis of this consent agreement, or this letter to issue a concern.
Okay. There were some noted deficiencies, yes. And I admitted that those are legitimate.
Mr. Phillips, are you still online?
Yes, I'm here.
This is Phillips. Can you give us a kind of a brief position on this?
As far as the complaint goes,
well, apparently there's a question about the cracking visibility.
Right. Yeah, there were visible cracks in the foundation, the walls, the ceilings, the floors, garage, interior, exterior, and being that, the house was close tension, we shouldn't have had that amount of cracking and that severity of cracking. And so I recommended further evaluation by licensed professionals.
Very appropriate. Board, any questions for Mr. Phillips or Mr. Richardson? No questions?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lega. Just as a point for both Mr. Phelps and for the alleger, that the letter of concern is non-disciplinary, so it is the lowest of letters that this board can issue to a registrant.
I do have some comments about that part as well whenever we get around to it, but thank you.
Thank you for your position on that. We have a recommendation that we issue a letter of concern to the home inspector, and I guess I'm not hearing anything yet that would alter that opinion. Board, any other discussion? If not, I think we can maybe move forward with the motion.
Mr. Chair,
If I have a chance to reply to the areas of concern, they said there were 8 of them on my report.
Yeah, please, very quickly.
And I apologize. I didn't even have to speak or be prepared. So let's see here. One of the concerns was the firm address was not on our inspection contract. Ignorance is no excuse, but I was not aware of that, and my contract had been previously approved by the board several years ago, and I was unaware that there was a change. One of them said I didn't identify the ceiling type structure, which in fact I did. Another one said that I didn't comment on the heating auto safety controls, which in fact I did. And functional drainage was something that's newer, and heating and cooling sources to all rooms, noting those. Also, my reports have been reviewed by the board before when I've done parallel inspections and so forth, and none of those things were needed at the time. Apparently, they've been added, unbeknownst to me. So I've made all the necessary additions to my reports and to my contracts. Just FYI, I've already done that. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Belt, for calling in. Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a recommendation that we accept the letter, that we recommend a letter of concern, but also to have Mr. Phelps review the SOPs and, like he just said, make sure his reporting software is up to date.
Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second to that motion, please, to accept the SOP letter of concern?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
I'm going to say nay, and I just wanted to point, just because I wanted to limit it to exactly what was in the letter of concern rather than additional information. And so that's the only basis for saying nay.
Okay. Ms. Clutt?
Aye.
Anybody else opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Mr. Phelps, thanks for calling in. And Mr. Richardson, appreciate your interest. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, it may be beneficial after a motion's been seconded for the board to be able to discuss at that time prior to the vote.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dolan. Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. Ms. Pham, can you review with the board your position on this?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. As usual, I have the majority of the licensing applications under the consent agenda. If any of the board members have any specific questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question or two.
Mr. Sale, please.
Thank you. Related to, let me get the number right here. 6A, A5, so many numbers on here. 6A53B.
And just by A to B.
I'll just go with application to waive FE exam 238796. Read.
What's the?
I think it's 5A, 5C, 5I.
I should have wrote the number down, but I have the page there. So
to confirm, like it's application number 238796.
Yep, that's the one. So on that one, looking through the review that was done, I just want to make a point that there, what it was noted on the check mark to see if he would qualify for the FE. In my opinion, he falls under. Having an ABET degree and the time, there's another check that said he was a professional engineer or working under, you know, working as a professional engineer. I didn't see that the professional engineer being backup from the foreign country. It wasn't from a foreign country. It was from a localized union, in my opinion, and not foreign country. So I don't think that qualifies for a. Basically being granted a professional engineering license from a foreign country. So I just want to make that stipulation on there. Other than that, I didn't have an issue with that, per se.
Mr. Sales, are you trying to pull that from the consent agenda or keep it on the consent agenda?
I'm not trying to pull it. I just want to make it, I guess, a stipulation that I was fine with. It's just that there was one, I guess where it goes to is if it were to go further, I don't know what I can't with Mr. Donald to want to keep, make sure I'm in there right, but for the FE exam, I'm okay with it.
And if I'm understanding correctly, Mr. Sales is saying the applicant meets the exam waiver under ARS 32-126D?
In my opinion, correct.
Mr. Chair, I've got another comment. I know it's like a broken record here, but on the first part, is there a way where the evaluator looks at the information? Can they always have a responsibility, or can they be required to either recommend or not recommend? Because there's some of them in here where the evaluator says they've got so many months of education and work credits, but I have no idea what's required and all that stuff. So most of them are saying with a recommendation for professional registration. Can they all do that?
They can, but there are situations where an applicant has already been evaluated previously, let's say for an exam application. And so in that case, if they meet the requirements for registration, months of education, months of experience, we don't have them re-evaluated for that same experience and education. And so that recommendation may be, you know, approved to sit for the exam because they've already been evaluated for that and not again for registration, as to not hold up that process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Mr. Sales, are you comfortable then we will accept the staff recommendation or include that in the consent?
Yes, I'm fine with that. Just want to make sure everybody, keeping my voice on what I found when I was reviewing the plethora of civils.
Okay. Board, any other discussion on any other licensing matters? Okay, hearing none, I'd like to entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept the consent agenda items 5A1.
Thank you, Ms. Danke. I'll move to accept the.
Thank you, Ms. Danke.
Sorry, I think there was a delay. I apologize.
We're good.
I'll second then.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Kleck?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that carries. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, just to be on the safe side, Ms. Skanky, just to confirm, your motion was to accept the consent agenda. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on. I'd like to move on to all those who are attending. Let's go to item 8A1.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think we still need to do number 6 for licensing matters.
Oh, and I was going to go back to them since they're not present.
That's up to you, Mr. Chair.
We can do that. Okay. Let's go on to licensing matters, item 6.
So this application was before the board last month. As of today, Mr. Bernhardt has paid the administrative penalty of $2,000 and the cost of investigation as of December 1st of $1,366.40. He also emailed me photos of certified mail that he had sent out to the two individuals for the restitution in the amount of $200 each. They are not in the board packet because he had just sent them to me as of yesterday.
Thank you, Julie. Board discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Just a point of clarification then. So he sent pictures of the certified mail. Did it also have the checks?
Yes.
Or whatever was in there?
It did have the checks, yes.
Great. I remember this came last month, and I think our only concern was that he satisfied the conditions of his original consent agreement from the way back. Turns out it's happened, so unless there's other discussion, I think I'd like to support his interest to be registered.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kaleka. Unless I get cut off by somebody else. I'm just teasing. I'd like to make a motion to go ahead and accept the registration approval for case, agenda item 6A1, Craig Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Kaleka. Can I get a second?
A second.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Ian Clark, seconds.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Clark. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on this item? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Clark?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. That motion passes.
And Mr. Chair?
And any opposed? I got it?
Okay.
Mr. Donovan, did I miss that tonight?
You just got it.
All right. I squeaked by. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was also going to ask if we could, after this agenda item, move to agenda item 7, as we have an independent advisor here.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to item 7A1. This is HI 23004. Mr. Arlene, are you going to present this one for Mr. Eden?
I could, yes.
Is he online? Did he want to do this? I thought.
Yeah. He's offline now. The board voted to offer Mr. Clock a consent agreement for a firm registration issue back in February of 2023. He indicated that he no longer wanted to hold his home inspector registration with us or his firm, but he did not sign the offered consent agreement at that time. So it went through to a formal hearing queue for it to go in front of an administrative law judge. Except we were able to do an informal settlement conference where he agreed to sign a consent agreement, which is what you have in front of you, for the voluntary surrender of his home inspection certification and the firm registration. So he has signed it, so it's up for the board's acceptance.
Thank you, Ms. Thurman. Board, any discussion on this? I'd like to have a chance to hear from our AG's office.
Good morning, Jean Galvin, Assistant Attorney General. I'm here today as your independent legal advisor. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them for you.
Okay, we have a signed consent agreement for Mr. Clunk to voluntarily surrender his license. If there's no more discussion, I'd like to accept a motion then to accept his signed consent agreement.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement for case HI 23004.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there a second?
Mike Lake will second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Would you like also to vacate the hearing?
Okay. Thank you. I think we need to modify the motion.
Actually, if I may, Mr. Chair, there hadn't been a hearing set in the matter yet, as this was settled prior to the complaint being filed.
If there was a referral to formal hearing, it would be appropriate to go ahead and move it and vacate it. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the consent agreement and we vacate the formal hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please?
I'll resecond that, Mike Clayton.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this item? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klutt?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. That motion carries. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Galvin.
Okay, let's move on to item 8A1. This is case number P24004. This is up for dismissal, but I'd like to hear from Mr. Cartel. We have an attendee, or virtual. Oh, in person. Mr. Pan, are you here?
I believe Mr. Pham was going to be virtual, and a respondent was going to be here in person, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So, do we have someone online that is involved with this case? Well, no one's participating. Kurt, is that correct?
I can call the alleger, but I wasn't given any info for the respondent.
Okay, my note says he was in person and wants to address the board, so maybe he changed his mind.
I apologize. I had notes mixed up. Respondent is not here from last I heard from. I apologize about that. I got another respondent mixed up with a different case.
Okay. So, just to be clear, there's no one else then attending respondent or a ledger in this case?
A ledger was going to try to be available virtually, but he stated he may or may not be able to.
Okay. Board, any discussion on this? I think since it's up for dismissal, I don't know if there's a whole lot to gain here. Unless, Mr. Patel, you think we have anything we need to review?
I'd be happy to give a summary if the board would like, but if you prefer to just go to a motion, I don't have any qualms with that.
Board, pleasure.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalega. Just in regards to this case, I just wanted to point out that the issue here and why it's being dismissed is the fact that there wasn't any ability to confirm, based on the information provided, that Mr. Morales had actual knowledge that the contractor to which he referred was, in fact, licensed or not. So that was one of the questions or issues raised by Mr. Marley during one of his assessments. So I just wanted to put that in the record. And with that, if anybody has any other comments, I can make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Galicka, for that clarification. Any other discussion items? If not, then, yeah, I'd like to get a motion to dismiss this case.
All right, Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept staff's recommendation for dismissal for case P24-004 for Mr. Morales.
Okay, can I get a second, please?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky? Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Clutt?
Sorry, that was an aye.
All right. Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Thank you. Let's move on to item 8A2.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'm going to recuse myself from this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sales. Okay, Mr. Cattell, you're up on. Can you give us a brief summary? We have attendees. Mr. Seymour, please come forward. And your attorney at present, and the alleger, Gary Lashin, if you were here. He's going to be virtual. Mr. Lashin, are you online? Okay, we'll start with that, Mr. Cartel. Can you give the board a brief summary of this case?
Yes, sir. So the board received this case. I'm going to read the summary of the complaint. On August 21st of 2023, the board received a complaint alleging respondent in ADOT as responsible for Arizona 811 and locating underground utilities that were not correctly shown on the record drawings. What had happened with this case is that the alleger, part of his duties was to locate underground utilities and at the intersection in question, which was part of it was Loop 202 and Desert Hills Parkway. While he was locating utilities, he found that the electrical utilities were on the opposite side of the road, as the record drawings shown. When looking into the matter further, he found that the record drawings had significant red line modifications on them that were not resealed after the fact. He said he reached out to ADOT to ask, why they weren't resealed by another engineer, and that ADOT informed him that it wasn't required and that they accepted red line modifications without it having to be resealed. Reached out to respondent. I would like to make a clarification here that this case was started as a UK for unknown. That was because we were not aware that respondent was a registrant, being that his name was misspelled in the complaint. Later on, we found out that he is a registrant. Respondent informed me that that section of Loop 202 was under a contract where ADOT essentially transferred control over that project to another company called, I'll make sure I don't get it wrong. I apologize.
Is that P202 or CP? C202P?
Yes, Connect 202 Partners, abbreviated to C202P. And under the ADOT contract, 2C202P, all phases of the project was transferred to this company and their subcontractors, which included designing the project, construction of the project, and 30 years of maintenance of the project. Under that contract, field changes to the designs ability was given to the construction crew to make red line modifications to record field changes without each page having to be resealed by another engineer. The record drawings that Ledger sent in included three engineer seals for the initial drawings. I reached out to all three of those gentlemen. None of them worked for ADOT and were not contracted with ADOT, but worked for subsidiaries to C202P. Those individuals were involved with the initial preparation of the documents, but were not involved in the red line modifications. One gentleman that we did reach out to, Mr. Fly, he was involved with the red line modifications in that under the ADOT contract, those record drawings were gathered and reviewed by Mr. Fly's office. They weren't individually sealed, but they were reviewed by him and his office, and he sealed a face page signifying that they were reviewed and that they were accepted. There was no notation next to his seal that it involved him going in person. And there is no requirement that we know of for him to go in person. What it boils down to is that we don't have jurisdiction over ADOT. Respondent, although he is a registrant, was not involved in the record drawings in question, being that they were handled by a subcontractor. And all the registrants listed in the documents that we received, we looked at their involvement to see if we needed opening cases against them. And we found no indication of possible violations to open new cases on. So that's, our recommendation is for dismissal.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Gentlemen, please identify yourself. As you probably aware, this case is a recommendation for dismissal. But I'm going to give you a chance to make a statement representing ADA.
Mr. Chairman, board members, Mr. Chairman, board members, my name is Ron Aschenbach. I'm an assistant attorney general for the state of Arizona. I represent the Arizona Department of Transportation and Mr. Samore. We believe that the statements that were just given to you and the response by Mr. Samore explain everything, and we have nothing additional to add. We ask that you vote to dismiss this.
What's that?
Well, Mr. Samore would like to say something.
Thank you. Mr. Samore.
Yes, thank you. And I want to express my appreciation of Mr. Cartel for a thorough investigation. And I guess my two questions as part of this dismissal are, so what's next? So Mr. Lasham, as many of you know from my response, made a very similar comment to the board in 2020. And in the October 2020 meeting, the board took up this subject. ADOT came over and presented our record drawings process. Our process is in compliance with ARS 32-152. And so, second, which wasn't noted in the presentation but is in the written response, is Mr. Lasham works for Connect 202 under a subsidiary called Floor Infrastructure Services, Industrial Services. as part of the contract, he is required to update the record drawings annually. We're in approaching year three of the contract. Third, Mr. Lasham took it upon himself to write the complaint this time, which warranted a full investigation. In 2020, it was only a public comment. So Mr. Lasham has now tied up the board with this investigation, Mr. Cartel and Mr. and ADOT. As a registrant, I feel he's failed to do his due diligence after the board turned it down the first time and said you should interact with the owner as opposed to bringing the complaint to the board. Second, he did not do his job under the contract because he has a contractual obligation to update those record drawings. And then third, he brought the complaint, wasting taxpayer money. I don't know what actions the board takes. It's clear my recommendation is dismissal. But at what point has a registrant abused his ability to bring issues to the board against the same agency with the same outcome? And I'll leave that.
Thank you for sharing your position on that. I think, obviously, this is an issue between yourselves and Mr. Lasham. Primarily, it's really difficult for the board to jump into what constitutes as, you know, these unwarranted complaints. I don't know if there's anything that we can pursue here unless ADOT filed a complaint. Mr. Donald?
Mr. Sharon, this ties a little bit into a later agenda item, actually, but the board does have a statutory mandate to investigate complaints that come in regardless of the source, and the board does not really have the discretion to not investigate a complaint due to any belief that there may have been a prior issue already resolved by the board. It is something that if a complaint comes in, the board has to investigate it.
Yeah, Mr. Clayton?
Mr. Donald, then I would assume that we would if we do this motion for dismissal, that would be one action, and then we would instruct staff to potentially open up an investigation into Mr. Lasham. Is that a correct deduction of what you were saying?
The matter before the board right now would be a dismissal or another action with regards to this investigation. If the board felt that there was a matter that should be investigated with regards to another licensee, the board certainly could then direct staff to initiate an investigation. The question would be what potential violation of board statutes or rules the board believes were indicated in the matter.
Hopefully, Mr. Lasham will realize that when this case is dismissed, he will have been informed to the point where he knows he's got no position to pursue this in any further complaint. Hopefully it's settled once for all, but we don't know that. Mr. Seymour.
Yeah, just for record, when this came up in 2020, Mr. Lasham did not attend the meeting to defend his comment, and apparently he's not here today. So for what it's worth, he's making these complaints, but he's not expressing either to ADOT his position or clearly to the board.
Mr. Cartel.
If I may add something for the sake of jurisdiction. As far as a complaint against Mr. Lasham, I don't believe we would have jurisdiction. He's not a registrant, and unless we had some evidence that he was practicing one of our regulated professions without license, from what I understand, his practice is as a project manager and utility locator, so I don't believe we would have jurisdiction over it.
Right. Mr. Seymour?
Yeah, Gary Lasham is a registrant. He shows up in your your index.
Right.
I have the number back in my chair.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, it may be more appropriate if there is any indication that there may be an issue concerning an individual, the complaint could certainly be filed or staff could be directed to initiate an investigation. That really wouldn't be a matter of this current other investigation. That would be an entirely separate matter, though.
Thank you. Board, any other discussion on this item? Okay. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. I don't see if there's anything in pursuit here. Hopefully Mr. Lasham has finally understood his relationship with ADOT and what he is supposed to be doing. if there's no other discussion, I'd like to get a motion, or a motion to accept the staff recommendation for dismissal.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to dismiss case UK24-005 against Mr. Robert Simore.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. We have a motion to accept staff recommendation for dismissal. Can I get a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
I do have
Mr.
just one point. So if he's a registered, just a question here. If he's registered, Mr. Latham, and he's required to do certain updating, is that something we want to look at or not? That's a separate one. Okay.
Yeah, his relationship, his responsibility, but ADA by contract.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chair, we do have one abstention.
We do have one abstention. Okay.
Recusal.
Clarification. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. Appreciate your time to come down.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item 8A4. This case number P24-019. Mr. Whitehead, are you online?
I saw him on the line a few minutes ago, but it looks like he just left. Would you like me to give him a call?
Yeah, give him a call if you would.
I see someone, Lacey Whitehead, just joined the call. I'm not sure if that might be him on a different account.
Mr. Whitehead, are you online? Jared Whitehead?
It looks like they just left the meeting again.
Huh. Well, maybe he'll call back in.
Maybe move on to the next item to see if he gets reconnected.
Okay. Mr. Perry, we'll call you back.
Looks like he just joined.
Okay. Mr. Whitehead, are you online? Mr. Whitehead?
Looks like he's muted.
What's it? Star six, Mr. Yes. Whitehead?
Here.
Okay, thank you. All right, this is case number P24-019. We have a staff recommendation for dismissal, but I'd like to hear from Mr. Perriott on the staff position on this complaint.
Hello, Board. In September, the Board got a complaint alleging the respondent and his firm were advertising in a local paper. They're offering construction and mining services. We found that he wasn't registered, him or the firm. After investigation, the Arizona Corporation Commission requires him to advertise in a local newspaper. His advertisement was placed with the other legal ads in the full page. No other ads with his business or name could be found when I went to look.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Perriott. Mr. Whitehead, we have a recommendation from staff for dismissal since there's no real conflict here. And I'm going to give you a chance to share your position on this.
No, I appreciate that, guys. I'm licensed in Alaska, and I'm open to getting to this, first time starting a survey business down here. So excited to continue to work with the board for many years to come, hopefully.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. Appreciate you calling in. Board, any discussion on this item? In that case, I'd like to get a motion to accept staff recommendation for dismissal of case P24-039.
Mr. Chairman, This is Scott Sales. I move to dismiss case P24-019. It's Mr. Whitehead.
Okay, we have a motion. Can I get a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any other discussion on this item? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Mr. Whitehead, thanks for calling in. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Okay, let's move on to item 885. Mr. Vera, you're back on deck. This is case number P24-012. Mr. Reyes, are you here? Maybe he changed his mind. We have a recommendation for dismissal, but Mr. Perriott, would you please give the board a very brief summary on what this is all about?
In August, the board received a complaint that the respondent was hired to perform architectural drawings. They gave him $2,500 as a deposit. He didn't complete the work. When he went back to get the deposit, in full amount, he didn't get it. When we looked into that, he had never been registered with the board. So when we did the investigation, he had made the payment by the end. He paid him in full, and they had a contract saying that he breached it and that the payment was made. When we looked into the firm, the principal of the firm, he was aware of the situation, aware of what was going on, that they had been paid back in full. And then he was a non-registrant because it was also his design development was for an exemption, single-family residence exemption.
Okay, thank you. Board, any questions for Mr. Perriott?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Blake. I also support the staff's recommendation for dismissal.
Very good. Can I get a motion then to accept staff recommendation for dismissal for P24-012?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept staff's recommendation for dismissal for case P24-012.
Thank you, Mr. Klinka. Can I get a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Any discussion on further discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of dismissing this case, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Thank you. Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Perriott. We have one final item. This is a motion, again, for dismissal. I don't believe we have anybody in attendance, so unless there's questions by the board, I'd like to accept a motion for dismissal. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, looking through the information and the staff recommendation, I agree that there's no jurisdiction for the board on this case.
Okay, is that a motion?
I guess I'll roll into one. That was not one, but this one would be. Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'd move to dismiss case UK24-009.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Can I get a second, please?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 8B1. Okay, this is item HI24001. Ms. Crawford, can you give the board a summary of the staff position on this complaint?
Certainly. Good morning, board. On July 17th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Cornville, Arizona, on or about July 11th, 2023, reported on multiple items incorrectly. Interviews were conducted for this case, and this case was sent out for case assessment. The case assessment reported that all of the initial allegations were unsubstantiated and also addressed within the report. The case assessment also included the home inspection report assessment, which found 5 missing or deficient SOPs, with all of them either being clerical or minor in nature. And a recommendation for a non-disciplinary letter of concern was recommended due to the de minimis nature of the deficiencies.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Brian Palmer, are you online? Kurt, is he online?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Mr. Palmer, do you have anything you want to add to this?
No, I, you know, this wasn't my client, of course. It was the seller of the home that wrote this letter and basically didn't like that I called out the stuff that we're all required to call out. And so I wrote a letter, and everybody got that, and so I'm pretty straightforward. She just accused me of not knowing what to do, and that hurts a little bit when people do that. And that's why I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Board, any questions for Ms. Crawford or Mr. Palmer? Okay, we have a staff recommendation to issue a letter of concern for HI 24001. If there's no discussion, I'd like to get a motion then to accept staff recommendation.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a motion to accept or to recommend a letter of concern as well as a review of the SOPs and to make sure that the reporting software is up to date.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please?
So, just to clarify, so we're talking about a letter of concern. So just a friendly encouragement to do those items. Okay.
Mike Lake, I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
This is Stacey Skanky. Just kind of same as what I previously discussed on a similar matter, where I want to just stick with just the letter of concern and not additional information. I also wanted to know, since we're discussing it, how are we pushing forward those additional recommendations?
Yeah, fair question. I think in this case, it was just a suggestion to Mr. Palmer that he make sure his reports are thorough and the analysis are complete in accordance with the standard, the SOPs.
Okay, so this is not either, you know, adding, amending the letter. This is, the letter still goes as is. This is just kind of a note on the record of best practices kind of suggestion.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, just a reminder.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I may, just for the board members, a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary resolution. It points out things that, in the board's opinion, if somebody were to continue, could potentially constitute a violation in the future or under different circumstances. At the present, you don't find any violation, but you do find that there are things that the person should take care with. But it's non-disciplinary, and the board does not have any ability to force somebody to take any remedial action in a letter of concern.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Yeah, again, this is just a suggestion, reminder. Okay.
This is Ryan again. I just have a quick question. When you guys send that letter out, will it specify the stuff that the person found on my recording, that so that way I know exactly what they're talking about, so that way I can update?
Certainly. Yeah, you'll get a letter from staff.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. If there's no other discussion, I'd like to get everyone who is in favor of the motion to say aye.
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, that motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. Mr. Palmer, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. You guys are welcome.
Thank you. Okay, the next item is HAP3. This is HI 24007. Mr. Borden? Kevin Borden, are you online? Okay. Curtis Kermit Hayden, is he online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you for confirming. Okay, Mr. Perriott, could you please review the staff position on this case, please?
So, in August, the board received a complaint that the respondent conducted a home inspection, and while he was doing it, he caused damage to the kitchen hardwood floors when he moved the refrigerator out. The investigation, the assessment, found that there were two minor deficiencies, but the initial allegations were unsubstantiated. The rest of the investigation substantiated it. We recommend a letter of concern for the de minimis reporting for the two SOPs.
Thank you, Mr. Perriott. Mr. Borden, do you want to make a statement?
No, sir, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Board, any questions for Mr. Perriott or Mr. Borden? Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we recommend a letter of concern, as well as to have the have Mr. Borden review his SOPs and also make sure his reporting software is up to date.
Very good. We have a motion. Can I get a second, please?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klutt?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Perriott.
Thank you, Board.
Okay, let's move on to item 8C1. Okay, this is case number P23-103. Ms. Crocker, can you give the board a summary, please?
On April 12, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent was hired by HOA's architecture board in a professional capacity to make an informed decision regarding a project submission. However, he is restating the opinion of an unlicensed individual. It is also alleged that respondent is not utilizing his professional license to review the facts as outlined in CC&Rs. It is also alleged that respondent is offering architectural services through respondent firm while respondent's registration is in delinquent status at the time since March 31st, 2023. After receiving this case, interviews were conducted and the case was sent to two independent case assessors. Both case assessors independently did not substantiate the initial allegation and reported that his reasoning for rejecting the project was appropriate at the time. A consent agreement was, however, drafted to address the lapse in registration and was presented to respondent, who has since signed the consent agreement and is before you for approval today.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Ms. Burton, are you online? Okay. Board, any questions for Ms. Crawford?
Board Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. I do believe that the alleger is also online and would like to speak with the board.
Mr. Neal?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Would you like to make a statement to the board?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm confused. In 2022, my wife and I submitted for the wall project for a 30-foot offset. The CC&Rs called for that. We were approved for it. We didn't build it because of rising costs. In 23, we went back to get it approved. We were told that it had been long enough that we needed to resubmit, and we needed to pay a fee to have Mr. Burton attend this meeting. When we arrived at the meeting, the head of the ARC said that they hired him so he didn't have to deliver bad news. We were confused, and they said, now, Mr. Burton explained that in 2023 versus 2022, that Mr. Burton and the ARC committee are now interpreting the CCNRs as a 40-foot setback. Our view, you know, as a licensed architect, I don't know how that gives him the right to interpret contract law, which are the CCNRs. Can't change the CCNRs. You can't interpret them. In his new interpretation, a 10-foot difference on the project was now not allowed. In our view, his license would take it a step further, not only preclude him from that, but he should educate his client on what the CCNRs actually state. I mean, there's Arizona, new Arizona case law that are from last year. Hathaway and Cabrera from Arizona stating that you can't change CCNRs. They clearly changed them from 22 to 23. CCNRs are from 1968. So I'm confused how Mr. Burton can give contract law.
Okay. Thank you for that, your explanation. Board, any questions for Mr. Neal or Ms. Crawford?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. Just to help clarify what Mr. Neal had been mentioning, so there were two, in addition to the staff investigation, there were two assessments done by licensed architects to review the information. Both of them felt that the allegations did not rise to the level of a violation of any of the ARS or board rules. However, the issue and the consent agreement that, from what we understand today, has been signed, based on what Ms. Crawford has said, was dealing with the lapse of registration. And so based on that signed consent agreement, I would be in support of accepting that signed consent agreement and closing the case out.
Board, any other discussion? Mr. Neal, I appreciate you calling in, but it appears that your issue is really with the HOA board and not with our respondent, Mr. Burke.
Well, I believe he can change contract law. He can, under his license, just state facts that are incorrect.
Well, a review of the CCNRs indicates that it is a 40-foot setback, not 30. So it would appear the original evaluation was incorrect. But again, well, that's an issue you need to take up with the board, not with this board.
Now, we're going to ask what you were reviewing. Are you reviewing the CCNR signed in 1968, or are you reviewing the rules and regulations adopted in 2019? Because those aren't the CCNRs.
It's really inappropriate for me to talk about it because we have two assessments by registered architects that agree with our respondent. So that's why I say this is really an issue you need to take up with the board, your HOA board.
Well, we have litigation, ongoing litigation, and my attorneys agree with the fact that the CCNRs from 1968 are a 30-foot setback. So,
all right, appreciate you calling in. Board, if there's no other discussion, I'd like to accept a motion to accept the signed consent agreement.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for case P23-103.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lika. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any other discussion on this motion? Hearing none, can I get a vote? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick? Ms. Hobick? Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Okay, we have an abstention, but motion carries.
For Ms. Hovick? Actually, I would put that down as a connectivity issue. If she was unable to respond, we would have to consider her temporarily not part of the meeting until we can establish communications.
Yeah. But we have the motion still carries. Thank you. All right, Ms. Crawford, mm-hmm. Thank you. Anybody opposed to this motion? Okay, if that motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Crawford. What? Okay, let's move on to item 8C3. We already did that. We did B2, didn't we? Yes. I was thinking of B2 already. Okay. AC3? Yeah, this is item HI24014. Ms. Crawford, can you share the staff position?
Certainly. On September 13th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent conducted a home inspection in Queen Creek, Arizona, on or about August 31st, 2023, while respondent's certified home inspector license was in delinquent status. Board records show that respondent's certification has been in delinquent status since January 17th, 2023. After receiving this case for investigation, respondent has since renewed his certification. Consent agreement was drafted to address the lapse in certification, and respondent has signed it, and it's before you for approval today.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. I don't believe anybody virtual for attendance on this one.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Board, any questions for Ms. Crawford on this? We have a signed consent agreement. I'd like to get a motion to accept the sign.
I believe the respondent is online right now.
Mr. McGarry, are you online?
I'm sorry, my apologies. I was on the wrong case.
All right. Very good. So can I get a motion then to accept the signed consent agreement? For HI24014.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement for HI24-014.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any other discussion on this item? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobig?
I'm going to abstain on this one. I have some computer issues.
Okay. Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Ms. Platt?
Aye.
Is that an aye? Okay.
Yes. Aye.
Okay. So, was that Ms. Hobig? Did she pass? He's abstaining. Okay. Okay, that motion still carries. Thank you. Anybody opposed? Now it carries. Thank you, Ms. Crocker. Okay, now we move on to item 8C3. This is P23039. Mr. Todd Hout, are you present? Okay. Ms. Crawford, can you give us a summary, please?
Yes. On November 5th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent prepared and sealed a boundary survey in Pima County, Arizona, on or about October 30th, 2017, and failed to record the survey. It is also alleged that respondent failed to record any surveys between 2017 and 2019. So this case really involves two separate surveys. There's the Larson survey and the Gabler survey. Board staff did attempt to get a copy of the Gabler survey through various methods, including subpoena. However, we were unable to receive a copy of that for technical review. The Larson survey was sent for case assessment, and no technical deficiencies were found. A consent agreement was generated to address the failure to record the two separate surveys, and the consent agreement has since been signed by respondent for this case.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Mr. Howe is online.
Okay. Mr. Howe, are you online, please? Todd Hout?
Yes.
Are you muted, star six?
Looks like you left the meeting.
Oh. Okay. Board, any questions for Ms. Carpenter? We have a signed consent agreement.
Can you just jump back on?
Mr. Hout? Todd Hout?
He's not muted, so he may be having microphone issues.
Okay. Well,
Mr. Hout, this is Kurt Winter. You may wish to try to do a call-in through your phone instead of through the Google Meet. You should still have that information in the paperwork that was sent to you.
Mr. Chair, given that we do have a signed consent agreement, I think it's okay if we go ahead and pursue a motion.
Is it
okay with that? Okay. So in that case, my colleague, I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for case P23-039, Mr. Todd Hout.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kalika. Can I get a second, please?
This is Dana Klett. I second.
Thank you, Ms. Klett. Any discussion on this motion?
Is this a signed or proposed?
Yes, it's signed.
It is.
Okay, we have a signed consent agreement and a motion and a second. No discussion. I'd like to push to a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Nanke?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right, the motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. Okay, let's move on to item 8D1. This is P23056. Don Jolly, are you here? Please come forward. Okay, Mr. Cartel, can you give the staff's position on this complaint, please?
Yes, sir. So on December 2nd of 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that after being hired on or about November 1st of 2018 and being paid for the Hosan Apartments project in Glendale, Arizona, the respondent failed to deliver completed plans and has failed to respond to all contact attempts. The alleger's complaint indicated that, going on 5 years now, they have not received plans that have been approved by the city of Glendale. They indicated that there is several delays, one of which a respondent voiced to them that he was under the impression that they wanted to abandon the project because he hadn't heard from them. Alleges indicated that they never voiced that and that they, although they had traveled, they were always available by phone. Ledgers further complained that when plans were eventually submitted to the city, they were rejected by the city for various reasons, and that respondent has failed to adequately work with the city to get them approved. And they're frustrated that it's going on 5 years now without being able to move forward with a construction permit. When reached out to the respondent explained that he hadn't heard from alleges in several months and was under the impression that they wanted to abandon the project. And in the meantime, became occupied with other projects and busy. And then when he did hear back from them, he agreed to move forward with their project despite having become busy with other projects. He indicated that further delays were caused when the city lost his project for a time, and then COVID, the city was shut down with COVID for a time. He also indicated that when he initially spoke with the city, the review supervisor indicated that his product design which was two duplexes connected by a firewall in the middle, was small enough and would be considered residential and would not require the engineering plans, which his contract with the ledger was based around. Respondent further indicated that after the city opened back up after COVID and they found his project, they handed him back a review comments that extended to 37 pages, and that a good chunk of that was based around a different review supervisor who did not consider it residential any longer and was requiring engineering services. Respondent said further delays were caused because the alleges were unwilling to pay for the additional engineering costs now that the city had required engineering. We sent this out to an assessment. I apologize, I'll back up a little bit. We did reach out to the current city review supervisor. He indicated that they had several meetings with respondent and had attempted to work with him, but that he characterized respondent's attitude towards them as rude and unwilling to work with them, and indicated that they were still waiting on the final submittal for the last set of review comments. After receiving all that information, we did set it up for assessment to two assessors. Both assessors voiced concerns over the time expanse, over the lack of communication, and over the concern of the firewall in the middle of the two duplexes being combined, being rated for 2 hours as opposed to 4 hours, possibly being a life safety issue. This was sent to an EAC meeting after receiving the assessments. In the EAC meeting, respondent made a couple of statements. One indicating that he did find later on that the code required a 4 hour fire rated wall in between the two duplexes as opposed to 2 hour, and acknowledged that he did not find that until later in the review process. The committee determined that it was an issue and substantiated failure to use the appropriate technical knowledge and skill, and that he did not to complete a thorough code analysis at the beginning of the project in preparation, at which time he would have found that a four-hour wall was required. They also opined that did represent a life safety issue. The committee did not substantiate gross negligence based on the opinion that the delays in the project, although extensive, the burden of responsibility for that would rest on all parties involved, including respondent, alleges, and the city. They further opined that his attitude with the city, although possibly unprofessional, was not within the board's purview to address. So they substantiated the one violation based on failing to adequately review the code to find the four-hour wall as opposed to a two-hour wall. Respondent had indicated that the city reviewers never caught that in his plans, never called it out, and our response to that is that the board does not have jurisdiction over the city's review process, but that we do have jurisdiction over his practice as an architect. So it was the committee's opinion that the failure to be up to code on that 4 hour as opposed to two hour wall is still a substantiated issue.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Mr. Jolly?
I'm here to answer any of your questions.
Okay. Thank you. Board, questions for Mr. Jolly or Mr. Cartel?
Mr. Jolly, this is Mike Kaleka. I assume that you've reviewed the proposed consent agreement that's been offered.
Yes.
And are you agreeable to signing that consent agreement?
After a long consideration, I have to decline because they're saying I'm guilty of something that Well, the only complaint that's holding up is in that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And the only reason that detail was on the plan, because the plan reviewer, the head of the building department, told me to put it on there.
And I appreciate that comment. However, as you know, city reviewers are not ultimately responsible for the code and completeness of drawings. That is us as a registrants who are ultimately responsible for that.
I agree. I have been to several rounds with them, including two pre-application meetings, five review meetings. It was 12 people there at least. And here we were trying to figure out what to do. I suggested a firewall. And he gave me the detail. He drew it twice and gave it to me to put on the plans.
Okay, thank you.
Questions? Any other questions? Mr. Jones, you acknowledge not doing a code check. That's kind of fundamental to starting an engagement.
Oh, I totally disagree with that. I went to the city and met with the head of the building department at the time, including the city engineer, discussed all the aspects. It was supposed to be a residential project, and discussed all the engineering that was going to be needed. And he said, you don't need electrical engineering, don't need civil engineering, don't need structural engineering. And I said, well, we're going to five. We started out with a five-unit project, and then it went to four because we didn't have room. And he said, well, that should work. And we went through it. And after COVID, and after they lost my project for a month and a half, suddenly everything was changed. They had all this engineering we had to have done, and then they said, so things weren't fitting. And so during the negotiations, they said, well, let's put a firewall between them, and I'll make it two duplexes instead of one fourplex. And they all agreed, and then he gave me that detail.
This is Mike Glick again, so I appreciate that, and regardless of whether the city reviewer or technical staff at the city provide us as architects with details, we're still ultimately responsible to vet that against the building code, and if in fact it doesn't meet the building code, which in this case it did not, then the registrant is ultimately still responsible. So it's not appropriate to defer that to a city reviewer and say, well, they gave it to me, that's right. Ultimately, it's up to us to concur that that is, in fact, the case, or if not, then we have to make sure we apply the proper building code sections. So I would debate and dispute that as an argument for your case.
Thank you, Mr. Klinka. I agree. Any other discussion, board? We have a recommendation from staff to offer a consent agreement that you have read, reviewed, and apparently not willing to sign at this point. It's your option not to sign, but this will go to administrative law judge if not signed in 30 days. So just want to let you know the process. So any questions on that?
Well, I'm at a loss because we were trying to get to the institute, and we went through five reviews.
Understood. That's not the issue. The issue is there's a code issue problem here that your peers, architects, did not accept your position on this.
And I presented a four-hour, I presented a firewall. He came back and says, no, let's just do the 2 hours, and drew out the detail for me to do. I'm at a loss of what to do because they were going against every agreement they had made. And so he said, all right, just do this, we'll pass it. And they went through several more reviews because they would pass even that.
But you subsequently confirmed that the code did require a four-hour firewall.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Okay. That's the issue. So,
right, you're fining me $1,000 for doing what they told me to do, and then make me pay the investigation. I'm asking that. It'll all be waived.
I've not seen any justification to waive the fee at this time.
And if I may add to that, Mr. Chair, you do have the option to present all this again to the administrative law judge should you choose not to sign the consent agreement within the 30-day period.
Okay, board, there's no discussion. I think we have a recommendation from staff to offer this consent agreement. It includes a letter of reprimand, probation and registration. I'm sure that's stayed. Administrative penalty in the amount of $1,000, and cost investigation of $758. And if not signed in 30 days, this will go to a hearing. If there's no discussion, I'd like to get a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to offer the proposed consent agreement as you've outlined in the summary in case P23-056, and if not signed within 30 days, we'll proceed to administrative law judge.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on this motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Mr. Jolly, I appreciate you coming in. It's your choice as to how you want to proceed at this point. Thank you, Mr. Cartel.
Mr. Chairman, I just wish to let the board know that a ledger, Mr. Dat Hom Pham, has got onto the call and has requested to discuss the item. The item has already been motioned upon, but I would like the board to know that he has come on now.
That was item 81.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, I have a question logistically for Mr. Donald. How do we proceed when the case has already been voted on for dismissal and this ledger now is on?
The board chair has the ability to control the agenda, including reopening an agenda item for an opportunity for an individual to speak, should he so wish, but the board chair is under no obligation. And certainly the board may go through the agenda, and once an item is done, may consider that item done as well.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Mr. Pham, you are online. I appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry you missed your opportunity initially. The board has already voted to dismiss this case, but since you called in, I want to give you like 1 minute to give a very brief statement. But we're not going to open this up for discussion. The motion has already been decided. But if you want to share any thoughts, I'll give you a minute. Mr. Pham?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes. I was wondering how come the case has been dismissed. Can you give me the explanation?
Mr. Pham, this is Mike Clegg. I'm the architect member on the board. The reason that we dismissed this case was that we had two assessors that provided an evaluation of this case, and the fact that Mr. Morales was not actually hired to do architectural drawings, but was intended, his services were there to assist with cost reduction opportunities. The only issue that was brought up during the assessments was by one of the reviewers, or assessors, I should say, was that he made a reference to a contractor who was not licensed by the Registrar of Contractors. However, there is no evidence to support whether Mr. Morales knew for a fact that that contractor was in fact licensed or not. And as a result, we did not find that there was sufficient information that rose to the level of disciplinary action, and as a result, we voted unanimously to dismiss the complaint against Mr. Morales.
Okay. So this was, my case was the first case, I assume, right, because I was told that the meeting was from 9 to 12, or maybe to 5, but I couldn't make it, but that's why I tried to read online, and now that you told me that it's dismissed, understand that Mr. Morales, of course, he would like say that he doesn't know those people are licensed or not. But I mean, before he hired those people, he should have some information, have acknowledged if they are a licensed contractor or not. You know, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, I can go elsewhere and find some handyman to do the project. You
yes.
See what I'm saying?
Ms. Pham, yeah, I think your issue is with your contractor and maybe the rest of your contractors, but it's out of our purview. But I appreciate you calling in. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I just a comment from Mr. Pham. I know that he missed the when we were discussing it, but this recording will go live, Kurt, in the next day or two online.
Yeah. By statute, it has to be up within 72 hours.
Okay, so at that time, Mr. Pham, you could go online, click some buttons, and get to the part where we discussed it for any further information that you may have missed when you weren't on the call. So just letting you know that there's that opportunity to see what was discussed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Appreciate that. This is next item is 8D2. This is P23028. Ms. Crawford. Mr. Jason Dottie, I hope I said that correctly. Are you here in person?
Oh,
right there. Okay, Ms. Crawford, can you give us a summary of the staff position, please?
On October 4th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent modified, signed, and sealed ANA engineering drawings intended to be used by their client, Complex Steel Buildings in California, without ANA engineering's permission. It is also alleged that the respondent submitted the modified drawings in Arizona. However, these plans were never intended nor approved for projects in Arizona. After receiving this case, the interviews were completed with all parties of the case, and it was discovered that the drawings were designed in Ohio for use only in California. Two case assessments were completed, which both of them recommended for an EAC meeting to be held for further review of the alleged violations. An EAC meeting was held on October 12th, and the EAC committee substantiated the allegation that respondent may have signed and sealed professional documents not prepared by himself or by a bona fide employee. The committee also noted concerns that the documents that were sealed were expired, were for sole use in the state of California, and were previously sealed by a registrant of a different discipline. Based on the EAC committee, a consent agreement was drafted and provided to the respondent for consideration. Respondent did review it and provided a counterproposal with some requested revisions, which should be in your packet before you for your review.
Thank you. Just to confirm, Rhea Rogers, are you online? She's representing Complex Steel.
I am here. Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to give Mr. Doty a chance to talk, and I want to have you share your position on this as well. Mr. Doty, please identify yourself, please.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Jason Doty. I'm an architect here in Arizona.
Can you give us a kind of a summary on your position on this case, please?
Yeah, sure. Last year I was hired to help somebody get a building permit for a steel building in Yavapai County. And so I got the initial drawings that were given to the client when he ordered a metal building. And I took a look at the drawings and noticed that they were, you know, California. I went ahead and noted on the drawings that, hey, this is an Arizona project, and I clouded some changes on the drawings. And sent it back. I probably should have put like a shop drawing seal on there or something like that and rejected it or something, but I just put my seal on there, sent it back to Mr. Schwinghammer and mentioned that he needs to get in contact with the engineer. I did check with the engineer to see if he was licensed in Arizona. So as far as I knew, he was capable of providing structural drawings for the building. And I think there's an email that mentioned that we needed the structural calculations and updated stuff from the engineer in order to move forward and get the building permit. Later, I never really followed up with it other than a couple phone calls mentioning that we needed to go further with this. Later, there was a site plan. I assumed there was going to be more work going on. They mentioned a 40-acre site, some possible solar panels, and I said, hey, I'll be there to support whatever you need throughout the project. And later I found out that it had been submitted to the city, and then I drove out there to the site and noticed that the building was built, and I know that the permit was not ready yet, so that's what happened.
Okay, thank you.
I was just trying to help them get the permit, and I just said, I'll do whatever you need and coordinate with whoever. So.
Yeah, there'll be some more discussion on that. Ray Rogers, do you want to share your position on this, please?
I didn't actually call you on behalf of A&A Engineering, so we're the ones who created these original plans. We do offer generic plans to our clients. They do have to renew them when they expire, and they are only for the state that they are, that's listed on the side of them and that they're stamped for. This engineer is licensed in Arizona. However, these plans were not designed for a building in Arizona.
Okay, thank you. Board, questions for Mr. Doty, for Ms. Crocker, for Ms. Rhea?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Laybeck. I have a couple things related to the counterproposal that Mr. Doty has provided. One of the comments that you made relative to potential changes, just to confirm, the project is in Yavapai County?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. However, one of your counterproposal comments says that, okay, I'm quoting this red lines here, quote, okay, but I still disagree with this because according to Phoenix Seal plan requirements, it is okay to modify drawings or others if you cloud or indicate the exact changes or take responsibility even without permission. However, the project is not in the city of Phoenix. Therefore, the city of Phoenix's seal requirements have no applicability to Yavapai County.
I understand that, but when I did my research that night when I was working on the project, that was the only, information I could find as far as putting a seal on a drawings in Arizona that without getting permission, because I had already reached out. I had not heard back from the engineer or the metal building company. So I thought, well, I've got to get this corrected because the guy said he had already ordered this building. And I said, my first thought was, well, this needs to be corrected quickly before the order gets fulfilled because this guy has already ordered the building and it's going to be come out and built. So I was kind of mistakenly under the gun, I guess, to get this done quickly. So that was my only concern. But, yeah, I realize it was City of Phoenix, but the City of Phoenix seal plan requirements, a print-off, I said that it was those, what they had written down was reviewed by the Arizona Board of Registration. It says that at the top of their requirements. Now I understand it's a different jurisdiction.
So you did not make contact with AA Engineering prior to stamping those plans?
No, I did not.
And why is that?
That was my mistake. I reached out over the phone to Mr. Schwinghammer, who was helping out the owner, Mr. Doors, with the project, and asked him to reach out.
So, just so that we're, this is Mike Klaika, so you know that is a pretty serious situation when you stamp somebody else's drawings, especially without their knowledge. That's a copyright violation, among other things. And so that's part of why the consent agreement is provided in the way that it is. And I see that you have asked to strike out certain language as well as reduce some of the proposed disciplinary action. However, and this may be where we'd love our enforcement manager, Orlean, to weigh in on that as to why those values are what they're provided. It is not an arbitrary component as part of a matrix that we use based on the severity of a potential allegation. So maybe, Orlean, you could elaborate on that a little bit if you don't mind.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a guide that we use. It would be up to the board to make that final determination. But based on previous cases for consistency and similar situations as this, that's what we based it on.
And if I may, I would like to make one quick legal observation with regards to the proposed modifications to paragraph 5. Paragraph 5 is providing information taken from the complaint, so none of that information is inaccurate. That is the complaint that was filed with the board.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. in relation to the red lines, looking through those, and definitely appreciate Ms. Crawford and other staff providing kind of an email summary with a lot of the information on why they are not applicable. That helped in reducing the searching for being able to find the information. So that's much appreciated. Looking through the documents, I'm on board with, I think everything else has been said here related to, you know, making sure not to seal stuff that's not yours. And I go one piece further is I know on the first page, for instance, you did seal it and cloud it and say that you made these changes. But on all the other pages, there were just clouds, and some were in red, some were in black. Just an observation that, you know, in the future, if it's done the right way, make sure to clarify the seal goes with this cloud so it's not confusing. Because I couldn't tell on some of them if it was you making the changes on the other sheets or if it was the engineer, because it's just a cloud that's sitting on a sheet that's not tied to whatever seal it is. So that's just an observation. And looking through the documents, I think you even mentioned in there about, and you've mentioned a few times about, well, you want to get this done quick for the clients or whoever. This is a nice, unfortunate lessons learned of just because the client wants it fast, it needs to be done properly the way the architects, engineers, and everybody else should be doing it correctly. So we've got to be able to say, hold on, we want to do it the right way for the right rules and regulations for Arizona, for the health, safety, welfare of the public, and whether they did order it or not ahead of time. That's just my thoughts on the subject there. And in the letter, it did denote that, where was it? About the markups and the sealing of the plans. I'll yield back a few minutes while I just gather myself, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Mr. Sales is doing that, Mr. Chair, if I may. This is Mike Klaika. A question for Mr. Doty is, if the board does not accept your counterproposal, are you still willing to sign the consent agreement as offered?
My significant other will make me sign it, I'm sure.
That's a higher standard than this board.
Yeah, so.
The reason I say that, in all seriousness, I personally don't see a reason why we would reduce the penalties, again, because of what Ms. Orbean has said, that is keeping consistent with the matrix. And the attempt to remove the complaint arguments, we can't do that because that was submitted to this board and therefore we have to retain that. Likewise, I wouldn't entertain the City of Phoenix justification because, again, it is a different jurisdiction. So that would be my position, but I am just one voting member on this board, so the rest of the board will have to make a determination as well.
And if I may point out also, there may be a misunderstanding with regards to the order portion of the consent agreement. While there is mention of a six-month suspension, that is a state suspension. So it would not be a matter of you be suspended for 6 months under this order. It would be a state suspension unless something else were to occur to trigger a lifting of that state.
Yeah, once I got the response back from the board explaining the rules and everything and the understanding of the enforcement guidelines and so forth, that made it pretty clear to me, but I had to take a shot at reducing it, so thank you.
Mr. General, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming in, first of all, and based on what you've heard already, we're trying to be consistent with other similar experiences in these kind of conflicts. The board takes putting a stamp on someone else's work very seriously, and so that's the nature of how this consent agreement was organized and presented. So I don't see anything that would change my opinion regarding the staff recommendation for the consent agreement. Board, any final discussion on this?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I was just going through my notes here. So I do appreciate that you, in going through the documents, that you acknowledge that you did provide some information you probably shouldn't have. So that's great of you to come forward on this. I just want to mention that. But I think I'm all on board with the original letter of reprimand as written, in my opinion.
Yeah. If there's no other discussion on this item, I'd like to give a motion to offer the signed consent agreement.
Second.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Clay. I'll make a motion in the case of P23-028 to offer the to offer a proposed consent agreement, and if not signed within 30 days, to proceed to hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kalika. We have a motion. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any other discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of offering the consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, thank you. Mr. Doty, appreciate you coming in. Okay. Okay. Next time it's going to be 8E1. I need to recuse myself from this. And I would ask Mr. Kleika if he would leave the motion.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. All right, so the case before us is P23-067. Respondent is Catherine Mills, civil engineer. Mr. Cartel, if you would please give a synopsis of the complaint.
Thank you. And from my understanding, Ms. Mills was going to be attending remotely.
Can we confirm if Ms. Mills is online?
She is online.
Thank you.
So on January 2nd of 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after contracting and accepting a payment in the amount of $2,823.45 from a client for a septic system design in Phoenix, Arizona, on or about June 3rd of 2021, failed to timely deliver septic system design plans after repeated attempts to obtain completed septic system design plans from respondent. The septic system design plans were not delivered until July 27th of 2022, which resulted in a large financial loss for the client. When this complaint came out, alleges had indicated that they hired respondent to do the septic system design plan for their new residential build. Alleger indicated that he had already obtained grading and drainage plans and a survey for the lot and provided those to respondent. Alleger acknowledged that later on, however, during the review process, the grading and drainage plans needed to be revised multiple times, once because the survey was incorrect and once because the grading and drainage showed the driveway on the wrong part of the property. He acknowledged that those issues did represent some of the delays, however, stated that Alleger's responsiveness or lack of responsiveness represented far more delay. He estimated approximately 8 months' worth.
Mr. Cartel, not interrupt. Do you mean the respondent's delays, not the alleger's delays, just to make sure we're clear?
I apologize. That's correct. Alleger said that he had a 12-month window, which he expressed to respondent from the beginning. The design plans were not submitted and approved by the city until 15 months later. Missing that 12-month window cost Alleger his contracting contract, and he estimated approximately $30,000 worth of costs associated with that. When reaching out to respondent indicated that the delays were, or that she did complete the design plans. She acknowledged that she was aware that the grading and drainage plans were incorrect that were provided to her, but stated that she did the best she could with what was provided to her, and submitted the plans to the county. Apologize. She indicated that the design plans were called out for not matching grading and drainage plans, and that required some resubmittal, which she did. It's noteworthy that neither respondent nor ledger indicated that the submittal rejection had anything to do with technical aspects of her design plans. We did send this out to assessors. The assessors indicated that they were concerned about the time lapse, the lack of communication, and the lack of project management on respondents' part. Neither of the assessors called out any technical issues with the design plans, however. We did go to an EAC meeting for this. In the EAC meeting, respondent acknowledged that she did miss a few emails and that she did not revise her plans as soon as she should have when they were called out for review comments in regards to the grading and drainage plans not matching. The EAC committee opined that, or the EAC committee as a whole opined that the situation, although they acknowledged that the delays were extensive and acknowledged that it did cost a heavy financial burden to a ledger, the committee as a whole did opine that it did not rise to the level of gross negligence. And based that upon the fact that the board rules do not have any rules or language addressing communication directly or addressing time frames directly, and opined that it was not a gross negligence issue. One assessor, however, disagreed with the rest of the committee. His opinion was that since the delays did cost the financial burden and whatnot, that it did rise to the level of gross negligence. It is noteworthy to mention that the EAC committee, as well as the assessors, did not call out any technical issues with the plans, but that the sole issue was the delays and respondents' acknowledgement of those delays. Again, as a whole, the committee did not substantiate and recommend and did not make any recommendations. We are putting this before the board for board guidance for a couple of reasons. First one, that one of the EAC members, although the committee as a whole did not substantiate it, one did have concerns. The other issue that we would like to present before the board is that there has been numerous previous issues. The committee acknowledged that each case needs to stand on its own merit as far as substantiation. But as far as determining what to do with a case, as far as board action, that the previous issues may be considered. So I would like to put it before the board for board guidance.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Appreciate that. Ms. Mills, would you like to please make a statement on your behalf? Ms. Mills, are you there? Make sure to hit *6 on your phone to unmute. Hey, let me know if someone's on.
She's on, but it looks like she's still muted. She just left the meeting.
Trying to redo. In the interim, I'll open up to the board for discussion.
Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to make a few points, but probably best to wait for Ms. Mills to try to jump back on here. So, imagine some nice calming hold music, whatever.
Would you care to sing for us, Mr. Sales?
Nobody wants that.
Looks like Ms. Mills has rejoined the meeting.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Ms. Mills. This is Mike Kaleka. We just heard from Mr. Cartel some of the synopsis of the complaint, and we'd like to hear from you now, your position on this case.
He seemed to sum up everything completely to me. At the beginning of the project, I didn't have a grading plan that was adequate. I did, like I said, did the best I could But then it was after they had revised the grading plan and sent it to me that apparently I was delayed in getting back to it, because I have anywhere, I do lots and lots of little projects, and so they often get mixed up with all the rest of them. And he did mention that the client made it clear to me at the beginning that there was a 12-month deadline, and I don't remember that being said. I don't know if it was said verbally or how he told me, because I don't have anything in writing about that. I think I have a text later saying, I need this done or something, but...
Understood. So just to clarify, your contract with the client did not have a time clause written into it, correct?
It just said it's estimated or expected to be. It doesn't have a specific time frame. It just said, no.
Okay. And part of the reason why this case is before the board for guidance is the fact that this is not the first or second or even third time where excessive time has passed on projects and a lack of communication. And I think the board would appreciate some type of response from you as to why this continues to become an issue for your practice, and also, you know, if you have any plans to address this as a professional such that these situations don't keep coming up and your cases keep coming before this board.
Back in January, I hired a project manager to assist in taking care of getting back to clients and making sure things are moving forward so that they can track everything, and it seems to be helping. So that is the steps that I've taken, because, like I said, there's just so many little projects that it's difficult to track them all, but she's doing a good job of tracking and making sure we're getting things done.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Board, any other comments or discussion?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. Looking through all the information I can see, I don't see where in the, I guess, the board purview to address timeliness, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just not, to me, it's in there. Of course, I'd be willing to hear from Mr. Donald on that if he thinks there's something in there, but I didn't see anything myself.
If the board is unable to enunciate a violation of a specific board statute or rule, then the board would have no basis for moving forward with the case. However, there is nothing wrong with, as the temporary chair has done, in providing some feedback regarding potentially ongoing issues and perhaps exploring whether or not there has been an attempt to address some of those issues.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. It does sound like Ms. Mills is attempting to right the ship, so to speak, with the new project manager, so hopefully that will be something that we'll see going forward. So based on that, it sounds like we, if there isn't any concrete element that we can actually tie to, then we would be looking at a dismissal of this case. So with that, is there any further discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion for dismissal for case P23067.
Mr. Acting Chair, I would move to dismiss P23-067 based on the information provided at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, all those in favor in the room, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Online, Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, motion carries. Mr. Gilmore?
Back to you.
Mr. Chair, can we have a 5-minute break?
Okay, I just got back.
Should I say, Mr. Acting Chair, can we have a 5-minute break?
Unless the permanent chair says no, I would go. I would like to as well. I'm bouncing in my seat. So.
All right, let's do a 10-minute break. See you back here shortly.
You just call me shortly?
Yeah. Okay, it's time to call the board back into session. Mr. Weber, can you do a roll call, please?
Mr. Gilmore?
Here.
Mr. Kalenka?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Ms. Klett?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Hobick?
Present.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky?
I am here, and I'm just announcing at 11:30, I'll need to take a break from this meeting to join another one, and I will come back promptly and announce my return when I'm done.
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Boho? Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. With the board's indulgence, I'd like to break out of our agenda and do another brief call to the public. We have an interested party here that would like to share some information. Obviously, we can't discuss this or make any motions, but I'm going to give you a chance to identify yourself and do a 2-minute presentation about your interest.
My name is Mark King. I own King Inspection Services. It's a home inspection company. I apologize. I guess I don't understand the logistics of all this. I'm just asking for a little help today. I'm curious as to why we have to mention ASHI in our state standards of practice. This is causing home inspectors that are not members of ASHI a lot of grief. Realtors are constantly stating to us, oh, you have to belong to ASHI to conduct home inspections in the state of Arizona. You have to belong to ASHI to get your certification from the state of Arizona. I'm constantly having to explain, no, that's not the case. My wife, who is a realtor, said the same thing to me. You have to belong to ASHI to conduct home inspections in the state of Arizona. I said, no. And she said, well, we just had a home inspector at one of our classes state that you had to belong to ASHI to be certified to conduct inspections. Twice in the last 2 weeks I've had to do this, explain to realtors. Here's the problem. The ASHI home inspectors are using this as a marketing tool. The fact that it says the Arizona chapter of American Society of Home Inspectors, that's the first thing in bold print that it says at the top of our SOP. They will say constantly, consistently, go look at the standards of practice. Go look at the standards of practice. Go look at the standards of practice. It says Arizona ASHI, and then they use that to try to secure the business. I don't understand why it just simply can't say the standards of practice for the state of Arizona. If we want to thank ASHI, that's great. That's fine. I have no axe to grind with ASHI. We want to send them a plaque. They can put it on the wall. I get it. I really do. I don't. But to have it on a state website, and I'm not stating that the state or the board, whoever conducted that decision, that was their intention. But it shows favoritism to one group of home inspectors over another. I was at the last home inspection committee meeting. And they were discussing changes to the SOP, and at the end of the meeting, they finally decided, let's just wait and see what ASHI does. And I'm like, we're not underneath the jurisdiction of ASHI. We're underneath the jurisdiction of the state. Why are we waiting on ASHI? So I'm just asking if it could be considered that on the state website that we could no longer mention ASHI, that it would be the state of Arizona, however you want to mention, standards of practice, so we could stop giving the ASHI inspectors a very big marketing club to beat us over the head with. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in. We can request the staff maybe you take a look at that, but that's not something we can address today, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, let's move on to item F1, 2, and 3. We have people interested in being members of our Enforcement Advisory Committee membership. Board, any discussion on any of these members?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. Related to item F8, F1, Mr. Chrisman, Home Inspector 74140. This was from last month. I'm hoping maybe he's online to or in person to just answer some general questions related to the resume that he provided and his interest in a little bit more information. I don't know. Hey, he's on.
I don't see him on, but I could give him a call.
I was just going to indicate that he would be available for a call.
Yes, please.
I'll bring them right now.
Mr. Chair, shall we proceed with F2 and 3 in the interim?
Sure. Yeah, let's.
All right, then, Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalaika. I'll make a motion to accept into EAC membership Mr. Michael Sexton and Mr. Samuel Hanna, which is agenda items 8, F23.
Thank you, Mr. Kalaika. We have a motion to accept the interest from these two members to be EAC members. Can I get a second?
Dr. Campbell, seconds.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Any other discussion on these two? If not, I'd like to get a vote to accept the motion to accept these two candidates for EEC membership. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hubick?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Ms. Clutt?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Great. Thank you. Okay. Is Mr. Chrisman available?
It'll start dialing right now. It'll be a little loud over the system. I believe Mr. Chrisman is connected now.
Mr. Chrisman, are you online?
If you're on your telephone, star 6 to unmute yourself, please.
Okay, appreciate you calling in. We appreciate your interest in being a member of the AEC committee. We have a board member that would like to ask some questions.
Sure. I'm here.
Thank you, Mr. Chrisman. This is Scott Sales. Thank you for calling in. A few just questions. We've got your resume here and just some of the items I want just some clarification on. The resume that you signed is for a business, and then you talk about a summary resume with some dates on there. Is that your work or the company's work?
I didn't hear what you said. I signed something? I didn't quite hear it.
Yeah, the resume that was provided with the application or with the submittal to be on there, you signed the resume, and then at the top of the resume it talks about StarCrest Consultants and Inspections, and then just at the bottom you sign it. Is that work that was on there? Was that the company's work, or was that your work?
I get the question. StarCrest Inspections, they started when they moved out here to Arizona about 3 years ago. And all those other projects, the Remark project, the NYSA or SISC projects, I did as a consultant and as an employee. I was employed by New York. And I was a consultant, that's what I understand. Consultant meaning I was an employee, but I was paying that day.
Okay, it's a little confusing, but that makes sense now. And then one other question I had is, in the email correspondence back and forth, your email signature is just a little odd looking. It's got your name, then it says MS Civil Engineering, and then it's got your license number. And correct me if I'm wrong, the license number is a home inspection license number or a civil engineering license number?
Home inspection. Yeah, I'm not licensed as an engineer and a consultant.
Okay. I guess just I don't know if I can mention a point, but it seems very confusing. It says MS Civil Engineering, then a license number. To me, it would mean a license number for civil engineering because there's no mention of home inspection in that anywhere.
I should make that clear.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I don't have any other comments, so I don't know if anybody else has.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I've got a question on the header of your resume. It says Engineering Foundation Certification.
What is that?
It's a housing urban development requirement, and it's for manufactured homes. So if somebody is buying a manufactured home and they're using government money, FHA, VA, USDA, they need to get that HUD Foundation Engineering Certificate. And all of it is verification that the foundation is tied down, it has the proper gears, and the underbelly of the vapor barrier is intact. So it's just more the foundation is done, it's not important.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Mr. Christman, I appreciate your being available to answer some questions. Any other questions for Mr. Christman?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith again. I just want to go over, I noticed you don't have, you've got 2 years here in Arizona as a inspector, and I just want to confirm you're aware that we have a report checklist and all, and SOPs, yeah. You're familiar with both of those, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I do my reports. Hopefully, I do my reports correctly to the SOP. You know, so.
Okay, Mr. Christman, thank you. Board, okay. We have interest in Mr. Christman to be an EAC member. There's no other discussion. And I accept maybe a motion to accept his interest.
Mr. Chair, can we refer to, I noticed on the agenda here, it talks about eligibility requirements for the EAC. Can we bring that up now, prior to this? Or what were you wanting to see?
We can talk about that later, but really this just comes down to what the board decides. And I would kindly remind the board members that this is a pool of volunteers. And it's a large pool of volunteers from all of the professions that the board oversees. And so there is no quantifiable reason to not approve somebody. We don't have anything written in statute or rule that says they need to be licensed in the state for a period of time or anything right now. So although we can have a discussion on things that you'd like to see in the future, perhaps, just bear that in mind.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I would like to make a motion that we accept Mr. Christman as a EAC member.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any other discussion, questions by the board? Okay. All those in favor of accepting Mr. Christman's interest to be a EAC member, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Danke? Okay. Ms. Clutton?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, that is approved. Welcome.
Great.
Anybody opposed? Right. I'm glad to. Anybody opposed? Okay. Mr. Christman, appreciate your interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sort of working with
you. Very good. Okay. On to the fun stuff. In the interest of
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Someone online, Charles Boddicker, has raised his hand. Does the board wish to hear from him?
What's his interest?
He's one of the licensing applications under the consent agenda, so that has already been approved by the board.
Mr. Boddicker, I appreciate you calling in. Your request for licensure has been approved already by the board.
I apologize. I got stuck in one of those meetings and then traffic killed me. So you guys did your thing and then, of course, I showed up right after. So I was just trying to get an answer on that. And I appreciate the approval very much. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks for calling in. Okay, at the request of our Attorney General Representative, Mr. Donald, if you'd like to jump into reviewing the complaint intake process before he has to take off. So, Mr. Donald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is something I will keep fairly brief. It was principally designed around a board member question regarding the intake process, and unfortunately, I believe the board member who had the question just left the meeting a few minutes ago. This is to quickly address a question that was raised regarding serial complainants. As you're aware, as board members are aware, the board has a mandate to protect public health, safety, and welfare, and they do it through licensing and through regulation. Through the regulation arm, complaints may come into the board, or the board may become aware of information that tends to indicate there may have been a violation of board statutes or rules. To that end, the board is statutorily authorized either to accept complaints from individuals or to initiate its own complaints based upon any such information. The board does not, however, have the discretion to simply not accept complaints. So if a complaint comes in, the board has an obligation statutorily to investigate it. If a second, third, fourth complaint comes in, unfortunately, the board would still have an obligation to investigate that complaint under the standard investigation process where a complaint comes in. It is vetted by board staff to perhaps an evaluator or to an EAC. It may be a very quick process, especially if there already has been an investigation of a similar situation or if it's an ancillary to another complaint. But the process would still have to be pursued. If for no other reason, the fact that the only body statutorily authorized to dismiss a complaint is the board. Board staff does not have any authority to simply dismiss a complaint or make that kind of decision. All decisions have to be made by the board. So with that said, that is really a very quick overview of that part of the intake process. But I know we've had questions before about these type of multiple complaint issues. Are there any questions I can answer regarding this process?
Board?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
While you're still present, as I understand it, Mr. Donald, there's no updates on the Mills case?
No, Mr. Chair. At present, the Mills case is set for, it has been reassigned to, I believe, Division 2 of the Appeals Court, and it is set for an opening brief to be filed beginning next year by appellants. After that, the boards and attorneys would have the opportunity to file a responsive brief, and then the appellant would have the opportunity to file a reply brief, and then it would be set potentially for oral arguments or for a decision by the court just on the briefings. I would anticipate we're probably looking sometime in the spring before we have any kind of a decision. So there will be updates to the board as things are filed, but the most substantive update would likely be in the March to April range once things are filed, assuming there are no further continuances requested.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Regarding the substantive policy statements that we're considering rescinding, before Mr. Donald leaves, is there any questions for Mr. Donald or staff on rescinding those substantive policy statements?
All I can say is that we reduced the numbers from the last meeting only for those that the LNR had recommended for rescission. Hayden has re-listened to the LNR audio and had written down the comments the LNR committee had regarding why it should be rescinded. We were just hoping the board to make a decision whether or not to rescind them. If you have any questions specific to any of them, just let us know.
And I just add in an effort to make this more what I referred to Jack yesterday as bite-sized, because when I first came to this board and saw how many substantive policy statements there were, I just about fell off the chair. So in our review and the review with the Laws and Rules LNR Committee, we
for this meeting in particular, we thought, well, let's just put all of the ones that they would recommend rescinding. And then we'll continue to give bite-sized amounts on these in future meetings.
And these were initially created as clarifications for some of the Arizona Administrative Code and for the suggestions.
A substantive policy statement is just a statement by the board of how it is interpreting a statute at a given time. They're non-binding, and any future board can rescind them, so they have no real force of law behind them. They simply give an insight to the public in how the board may be viewing a particular situation at a particular time. There are also substantive policy statements that may no longer have any applicability, such as, for example, the policy statement regarding direct supervision for sampling and testing, where the board does not have any jurisdiction over drug labs anymore. So there are policy statements that simply are eating up space at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question on number 14, the one for complaint resolution. Does staff have this to reference?
The staff has its own matrix. As you guys know, when you see the administrative penalties and so forth in the consent agreements, that we do have an internal matrix that we currently use, and so there's really no point to have it in a substantive policy statement, as that could change, and a substantive policy statement may give the public the incorrect, but basically it's not what the board is currently doing.
I would like to add to that that when Mr. Winter says that the staff have a policy, that this is built based upon what the board has actually done. So this isn't a staff policy so much as it's a crystallization of decisions made by the board, and additionally the board can modify it at any time. They can review the guidance, and it's simply a matrix that provides for a presumptive in any case from which the board can deviate.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Board, any questions for Mr. Dollar, Ms. Dietweek, or Mr. Winter? Now we can take a motion to accept staff recommendation to rescind substantive policy statements 3, 5, 6, 9, 10, 14, and 19.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'd just like to thank all the committee subcommittees and everybody involved that dug through everything and Hayden for listening to the hours of playback to find all the items in there to help make this a little bit more streamlined. So much appreciated, everybody involved.
So is that a motion?
Still a statement again, but I can do a motion. Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I would move that we rescind substantive policy statements 3, 5, 6, 9, 10, 14, and 19.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Can I get a second, please?
Well, let's go on a second.
Okay. I think Mr. Nes could go on there first. But thank you, Dr. Campbell. Any other discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick? Ms. Danke is off. Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Okay, we have 5-6 in favor.
Ms. Hobick is muted.
I'm here. Sorry, I'm just having computer issues. My vote is aye.
Okay, thank you. Anybody opposed? All right, the motion carries. Okay. Mr. Donald, you're going to be taking off. Are there any other items you want to discuss with the board before you take off? Item 11, Assistant Attorney General's report.
There is nothing to report under agenda item 11 at this time.
All right. Okay, let's move on to item 9B then. We have appointment of new Home Inspector for the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. We have some attendees. Gentlemen, if you're intending to express your interest to be members of the board or the Home Inspection Rules Committee, please come forward.
Come on down.
Okay, I'd like to. Kurt, do we have anybody online?
I don't see any more virtual attendees.
Okay. John, I'm going to start to the right. Please introduce yourself.
Dylan Bucknavich, Home Inspector 43777.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Sean Garvey, 65301.
Okay.
Stephen Boyle, Home Inspector 59714.
Eric Spears, 43458.
Thank you. Gentlemen, appreciate you coming down. I'd like to maybe initially accept it, just a statement from you guys as to your interest and a little bit about your background. Okay, we'll start, Mr. I'm going to butcher your name, I'm sorry.
Okay, this is Dylan Bucknavich.
Bucknavich, thank you.
So I know in August there was another opening, and I had submitted my interest for that. That was an eye-opening experience. I remember John Ellison got appointed, and I could not agree more with that decision. My background initially, I became a certified inspector in 2005. I actually took a break to be a full-time realtor for a few years and then went back into inspections once the software got better, and that point aside. So I had that perspective from both angles. That triggered my interest in the Rules and Standards Committee. But after seeing Mr. Elson's qualifications, I realized that there was a lot of work to do. I could contribute a lot more. And so after that, I did join the EAC. I did begin assisting in applicant review. And I had been listening into board meetings one after another, just trying to understand. So I have a new appreciation for what it takes to be on the board. Even being part of the EAC, just seeing, I don't want to butcher his name, but Steve, the report reviewer, the work that he does. So just have a new appreciation of what goes into it and a better understanding. So I did want to just come back and like, okay, now I feel like I'm more prepared to be a member and contribute that way.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Garvey.
Thank you. My name is Sean Garvey. I started an inspection company here in 2017, so in Arizona. I have a unique experience, or maybe not entirely unique experience, but I started a home inspection company in Honolulu, Hawaii, 2014, and then worked with some teams in Atlanta as well as Boise. So I bring a unique perspective that has multiple states, or I could bring a unique perspective working in multiple states to the board. I'm intrigued because I think that at this point our industry is in a unique inflection point that's quickly evolving and changing and needs some rational understanding of the rules as well, with the relationship of the, or changing of the relationship of the real estate market, litigation of real estate agents, and the introduction of technology and, quite frankly, maturity of our industry too. So that brought my interest to the board, participant of the board as well.
Thank you. Mr. Boyle.
Chairman Gilmore, members of the committee, thank you for considering me for the open position on the Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. I've been a licensed home inspector in Arizona since 2015 and have performed nearly 5,000 inspections locally. Additionally, I volunteered at the BTR as a member of the EAC committee for the past 6 years, processing complaints and new member applications. I feel that I represent a younger generation of leadership, and my technical knowledge and experience will help provide insight for new entrants to the profession in the years ahead. Thanks again for your consideration.
Okay. Spears.
My name is Eric Spears. I've been an inspector since 2005. I probably done coming up on about 10,000 inspections in that time. And at this state of my career, it's sort of like that, one of those times where you're thinking, what can I do to challenge myself? What can I do to expand my horizons a little bit, and this came across my desk and was like, oh, that's an interesting. I've been to several of the meetings before and seen the process, and so I was interested for that reason.
Thank you. Board, I want to open this up for discussion and questions to the attendees. Mr. Smith,
Mr. Chairman, yes. Mr. Spears, are you familiar with the EAC?
Okay. No.
And then, Kirby, are you familiar with an EAC?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And then, we just appointed a member to that, and they kind of look over if there's violations or concerns, they kind of look over that kind of stuff. So we'd like to see participation in that, just to show the interest, you know, that you have interest in the profession and stuff like that. Has any of you attended the Home Inspectors Rules Committee meetings?
You all have.
Great. And then I've got some follow-ups, but I don't want to hog it, so go ahead.
You're our home inspector on the board.
Oh, okay.
Please continue.
I think Scott wants to say something.
Go ahead. We'll share.
I'll do a few questions and I'll bounce back.
Okay.
You, Mr. So, Scott Sales, thanks for all showing up here today. Appreciate all the interest. I guess one question for Chairman, just for point of clarification, is this for one position or are there multiple positions up for? Okay, just one. Okay. And then some of the questions I asked last time to the folks, so the folks that were here last time might have already known one of these. So just what's your opinion on the information there about how home inspectors are supposed to deal with the realtors and such related to, say, the pay-to-play items? Let's just start on the right, go to the left.
This is Dylan Bucknavich. Once again, it's just about, as far as the relationship goes, having been on both sides as a realtor and inspector, it's just about boundaries. Understanding, as an inspector, just choosing who you work with as far as the agent goes, understanding that if they don't respect the process, there's no, just cut it off. Don't work that way. As far as the pay-to-play, I don't participate. I don't know much about it. I know it does. I would find it to be confusing. I think there are situations where, and I still carry a real estate license. So I'm still at a brokerage. I'm still in Facebook forum just seeing that. I don't sell anymore, but I see that. And it is odd seeing a random agent saying, oh, hey, anybody know an inspector? And then the broker says, oh, I'm going to use this guy because he's our power partner, which is code for they're paying for us. They're paying, they're sponsoring. I'm sure there's a legal way to get around that, but that is the confusing aspect of it. So I don't know what to do about it. I think it's, I think it comes down to the inspector having a relationship with the agent. That's how you get jobs. You don't get a job by being a power partner. So on top of that, I just think that, it's just about setting boundaries with the realtor, choosing who you work with. Obviously, we have ethics to follow. I think it's pretty easy to do that. I've always done that. I've told plenty of realtors to, we are not a match. We shouldn't work together. I'm not going to do what you're asking me, and I'll find business elsewhere. And I'm just getting much up in a ramble, so I'm just going to stop talking. Look at Sean.
That's a good question. Sean Garvey, we have never participated in any particular type of pay-to-play environment. I believe our position, our profession, is based on integrity, pretty much. Not pretty much. Integrity. It's for the simple fact that we walk into strangers' homes. We access the home. We walk through. There's personal belongings in there, and it starts in that element with integrity. We have to be trusted. And so if we're going to obtain jobs through pay-to-play environments, then we're not receiving the jobs for the right reasons and not having any integrity in that environment.
I'm probably the only one up here that doesn't actually own an inspection company, so I really don't see this side of the business too often, but I can see how it could be a big issue. But I could also see how it's something that's very difficult to enforce any regulation on. So it's certainly, something that you can have all the rules in the world, but if you're not able to enforce anything, then it really doesn't matter. We've got to come up with different solutions for that particular problem.
As far as I'm concerned, I've never participated in pay-to-play at all. In fact, I disdain it. I don't like it. And even to the point of, you'll have realtors call you and say, hey, I'm putting on a Christmas party. Can you put in a $50 gift card? And you feel like if my answer is the right answer, am I going to continue to get business? But my answer was always the same, no. So I absolutely never have and wouldn't even dream of it, so I'm in full agreement with the rules. And when it comes to integrity is top of my list and always has been. One of the meetings that I attended when I came to the Rules Committee was about the termite inspection issue and home inspectors upcharging for termites. And I'm so against that and had such a hard time finding termite companies to play ball with me that I got my own termite inspection license to get around with it. So, yeah, I'm very clear on that.
Thank you very much. And then just a follow-up question, just to confirm, everybody, or just go down the line, you have time and commitment to be able to put the time in to be on the committee, because having sat through one and listened to some, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it prep time, so just want to get confirmation that, yeah, you guys all have time to be able to be committed to this committee.
I can confirm that.
Yes, I can confirm that.
Yes, I will make the time.
Steve.
Yeah, Mr. Galika.
This one is directed to those who have already had EAC experience. So I believe that would be Mr. Buknovich and Mr. Boyle. Is that right? Because the other two gentlemen have not. Mr. Boyle, you said that you've been on the EAC for 6 years. Do you have a sense of, in that time, how many assessments that you've done, sort of off the top of your head?
I'd say probably 20 to 30, something like that.
And have you attended an actual EAC hearing?
Yes, many of them. So I've done both report reviews and attended meetings.
Thank you. Mr. Buknovich, how many have you done so far?
I've done one.
And no attending the EAC hearings yet?
I'm not sure what the difference is. It was the phone call. It was we heard from the respondent, the alleger, whether that was a hearing or what that was. But
that was, okay. Yeah.
And if I may, just the board members may not be aware, but actually nobody who's not a member of an EAC would be able to attend an EAC meeting. They are closed to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. I was more just curious how many they had attended in the past or had participated as an assessment or attending a hearing. But yeah, thank you.
Mr. Klieg, I just want to make a point there that there's a big pool for that. So to me, it's not that they didn't have an opportunity to do more. They just might not have been called on one for more. So while you've done a great many, it's just that pool. So not to be tainted by not being able to do more.
Mr. Chairman, I've got another couple of questions here. And this is for just everybody. Do you guys do parallel inspections?
This is Dylan Buknovich. Yes, I do. Sean Garvey, yes, we perform parallel inspections.
Yes, I do, and I actually own and created an app for parallel inspectors to do their reports that conform with the state standards.
I do parallels as well.
And then are you guys aware that we've got an awful lot of issues or violations with report writing? So when you guys do your parallels, do you review those reports to make sure they're in compliance with those 84 items?
This is Dylan Buckley.
I do, in fact. I'm a little different than most in that I wrote my own software to do my home inspections with. And the way that I wrote the software actually was in the form of a checklist that goes down each of the standards one by one in order. One of the people that taught me was Peter Leeds back in 2005. And when we were doing work for him, we would submit our reports, and I would do it all in a Word document. And that's how I started. I would put the standards in, and I would just fill in things underneath it. And he told me, if you always do that, you'll never get in trouble with the BTR. And I said, well, okay. So I wrote some software that enables it essentially to do that. And when you write reports, you can't not do it the way I structured the software. So it's kind of like one of the things that I impress upon people when I'm teaching, like top of the line.
So you let them use your software then?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
So, my answer is going to be very similar to that. The app that I created for this is called Inspector Dojo. So if you wanted to go to inspectordojo.com, you could see what, you know, a sample report of what that would look like. But it basically takes you down standard by standard, and I think that just works a lot better than somebody's 10-year-old home gauge template where they're taking hundreds of photos and everything like that. This is basically exactly what you need to know and only what you need to know to get that license.
I have not created, my name is Sean Garvey. All right. I have not created software for this, unlike these two gentlemen. But we've written the software so that it conforms to standards, and then we keep it updated as they change. And then our team is working, so people that we're doing parallels with are working in our software so they get a full experience of what an inspection would be for a client as well as for the state standards.
This is Dylan Buknevich. Yes, with the gentlemen, the inspectors I work with, the applicants, I do have what I call a perfect template, the perfect house template that I let them use. It's not, doesn't mean the defects. I want them to figure that out on their own, but it does. Once the report is 100%, they're done. The standards have been met, and they're good to go. And yes, we review those on them.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. I got just a quick question. When you do your reports, do you prefer to have these done by yourself? Do you encourage the homeowner or the agent to be attending? Do you have a preference? It's not required, I know, but do you have a preference there? And does that ever create an issue for you?
The inspection, you
say? Yeah, the home inspection. The actual home inspection on site.
I always want my client to be there. And if the realtor wants to be there, that's fine. The homeowner usually not, and the seller's agent usually not. In fact, I offer them a discount if they'll be there because it makes it easier. Because when I can talk to them in person, I'm at the property. I mean, talking to people on the phone is just it's 100% more difficult. So I'm encouraging them to be there.
And your clients are primarily the seller?
No, my primarily the buyer, and their agent.
But you do both, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
So I typically have the client show up at the end after I'm done with the inspection. I like to have an empty house, if at all possible, with pets removed and just as little distractions as I can possibly have as I'm doing my thing. And I have them come at the end and go through everything with the computer or on the computer with them.
We invite all parties to be a part of the process. Buyers, obviously, because it's important for them. Buyers' agents, because they represent them. Sellers' agents, to protect their sellers. And sellers, because it's their home. No, it doesn't affect it. We have a job to do in state standards. Well,
it's Dylan.
Yeah, as long as it's safe, by way, anybody can defend.
This is Dylan Buknevich. Everybody's free to attend. They can attend the entire time. They can attend at the end. I love doing the wrap-up. That communication, it's easy to just send a report and, you know, report on the hospital, and you can walk them through shut-off valves and just locations, like little things like just showing them how to use a shut-off valve and creating muscle memory at the house where their air filters are. So, yeah, we encourage a full interactive experience. As long as they don't bring their contractor fathers, I'm good with that.
Thank you. Okay, board. Any other discussion, any questions?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I think they are all qualified. I would like to make a motion, though, at this time, to accept Stephen Boyle as the Home Inspector Rules Committee member.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Does that take a second? Motion? Okay. We have a second.
Majority.
Okay. We have a second on that motion?
Mr. Chair, this is my colleague. I will second that motion.
All right. Any other discussion, board? Any other nominations at this point?
This is Stacy Skanky. I just wanted to note that I have returned. I didn't see the whole process, so I'm going to abstain from voting just since I did hear that whole presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Dankey. Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept Mr. Boyle's interest to be a EA or a Home Inspection Rules Committee member. Do you have a discussion? All those in, should we do a roll call? Let's do a roll call, please.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Mr. Kolecka?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobig?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Gentlemen, I wish we could take you all. It's the this is the top part. I think you're all very qualified, and I would encourage you guys that are not on EAC committee members to express your interest to maybe join. I think it's insightful and certainly of interest to the board that you have that background, hopefully for future appointments. But I appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I would add to that, please, please do, if you're not involved with the EAC committee, email Orlene and let her know your interest in that. And if I had my way, the committee would have 5 appointed people. I've been pretty vocal about that, not just 3. So stay involved with the HROC committee meetings, because we would really like to have you all. Thank you.
Jump into the nominations. Can we get through the update on the rule package?
This is for winter. Yes, so about a month ago, board staff had submitted the supplemental rule package to the Secretary of State after the board had motioned to do so. And it was just put into the register, the state register, this last Friday on the 1st. And so we sent out a mass email yesterday to all registrants indicating that there's a rule package. Now that it has slight changes, it's now being given to all registrants, not just the home inspector population. The mass email details quite a bit about kind of like the history of it, where to go to find the information, and thus far. I have already received a couple comments based on that supplemental. It is open for a 30-day period this time around as opposed to a 90-day as the proposed had been. And so we're just going to wait until the end of December to receive those comments. And once we have all the comments and that time period is up, you would again come before the board for possible changes to end it or to continue on to the final rulemaking.
Thank you, Kurt. Board, I got my copy of the email. I'm assuming we all did. I guess I would encourage you all to review that and share questions with Mr. Winter or staff.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, so I got the email too, so I know my email is correct. But so someone can go and use the links on that email, or they can also show up here in person and provide their comments. Is that correct?
At this time, we did not put a public comment period. However, if somebody were to request it, that can be arranged to have it happen here in the boardroom. People can always call in or come to the office, and I would record any comments they had if they don't wish to write. But email, letter, fax, calling in, walking in, any public comment will be accepted.
Great. Thanks for the clarification.
Okay, next item, eligibility requirements for EAC. Is this something that's being analyzed by staff? I think this question came up last month. Yeah.
My concern was, I mean, we've got a lot of issues with a lot of violations in the home inspection field, and I figured, you know, maybe some of that has to do with experience. So I thought if we could put a 3-year limit or some kind of a limit to where they have more experience, it may help in reducing some of those violations, because I've had EAC meetings where we had a person with 1 year experience there, and I just don't think they have enough knowledge of what we're looking for in reports and things like that. So that's why I brought it up. And then again, I realize you select them, so it's up to you, I think, what you want to have as far as requirements, right?
Well, the board has to approve them for the pool of volunteers, right? And then you've got a whole, I mean, you're looking at just the home inspectors, right. But obviously our pool of volunteers is all the professions. And then, again, with our complicated engineers, not just engineers, but all those different branches of engineers that fall under that, too. Yes, it does state in rule that the, let's see, yeah, let me find it here. Oops. I'll read it. The board, this is in R430-120 in the Arizona Administrative Code. As part of the complaint review process, the board shall select a pool of volunteers who have submitted resumes and letters of intent to serve on enforcement advisory committees. The executive director shall select registrants and public members from the pool of volunteers to serve on the committees as needed. And then some more instructions on that. So I do work with Orlean and her team looking at the volunteers that are chosen. But I think there's always a good mix. It's not like there's ever one person. Even if you had somebody with maybe 1 year of experience, you're going to have two or three others in that specific profession with varied years of experience. I have yet to see any situation now, Orlean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, where you had three or four experts that were all, you know, very limited in their experience. Do you want to add to that?
I can't recall a time that would be. Typically, we have at least three members with various years of experience. We can do 3 to 5, but I can't recall a time where it was all 3 or 4 were, you know, 1 year of experience or anything like that.
That's not to say it couldn't happen. I mean, it could happen at some point, but whatever you guys want to do, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
But in speaking of 3 to 5, Judith, I think you bring up a good point. Why are there only 3 members on this committee versus 5 with many representatives?
Are you thinking of the HIRSD committee?
Yeah.
Because it's in rule there that the board appoints 3 members to be on that committee. So we would...
Sorry, for clarification. So we're talking about EACs right now. The Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee, which you have just voted a new member to, that's in statute about there's 3 home inspectors plus 2 board members on that. But the EACs, it says in the rule that you can select, you know, 3, a minimum of 3 EAC members for an EAC committee meeting.
Does that work that well for you guys, or would you prefer to see 5 home inspectors?
Again, are we talking about the
home inspectors
committee?
Yeah, because right now it's 3 and 2.
I think so. We're talking about EAC and not the Home Inspector Committee right now. And so,
eligibility
for EAC membership, which currently there isn't. Right now, based on the rule, all they do is give us a CV and a letter of interest. And then the board, as you see it through board meetings, looks at that information, can ask questions if need be, and then, you know, approves or denies adding them to the volunteer pool. Mr. Smith, at the last meeting, had requested a discussion about the requirements to become an EAC member, probably beyond the rule. And so this is what that discussion's about. So should the EAC membership, should the board have some kind of standard in place to kind of vet them prior to coming for the board?
Okay, so I was jumping into a new agendized item that's not there, so.
Right, so for the committee, there is specific criteria that's in statute. My apologies, I said rule, it's in statute, but. Yeah, that's a whole different topic from the EAC volunteers.
This is Mike Lake. I think as much as I appreciate Mr. Smith's comment about tenure, I think the fact that this board does vet and ultimately will make a selection on a new EAC member, I think that if there's a concern about years of experience, we can address that with the interested party as part of a board meeting. So I don't know necessarily that we would need to put a year's cap because I wouldn't want to potentially exclude a viable candidate if they meet it in other capacities. So that would be my only response as far as that goes.
Well, additionally, too, just if it helps put your mind at ease, also the EAC review meetings, because they're often referred to as hearing, right? But they're not hearings; they're just part of the investigative process, as spelled out for us. That they also always have legal counsel. We have an assistant attorney general there. The investigator, who's well versed in laws and statutes and rules, is running the show. Myself, Orlean, Kurt, or, you know. I think you're in good hands to make sure it's we stay on track and focused.
I'm satisfied. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to appointment, board chair, vice chair, and secretary. At this time, I'd like to make a motion. I can do that. I'd like to make a motion to nominate Michael Kalika to be our board chair for next year. I think we do these one at a time, Judith?
Yeah.
So I'd like to nominate Mr. Kalika.
And this is Keith Smith. I second.
Great. Let's do any discussion. Anybody concerned about Mr. Kalika?
They should be.
Right. I would just give to Stacey Skanky, I'd just like to give my full-hearted support.
Great. All right. Any other nominations for board chair? If not, I'd like to get a roll call. We need a roll call for this. I think it's probably more appropriate.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Mr. Kalika?
Aye, I guess. A little comment interesting.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes.
Thank you. Anybody opposed? Court forgive it. Okay. Congratulations, Mr. Kalika. Okay, we need a vice chair. Can I get a motion?
Mr. Chair, I think you're still Mr. Chair for the rest of the meeting. So this is Mike Kalika. I am incredibly honored and humbled to nominate Mr. Scott Sales as our Vice Chair of the Board.
Great. We have a motion. Can I get a second?
Bill Nesbitt, I'll second that.
Great. Any other nominations? So, okay. Mr. Weber, let's do a roll call.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Humbly.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Okay, now we need a secretary. Can I get a motion for board secretary?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. First, I guess I'd like to open it up and actually ask. I have someone, a couple people in mind, but I want to see if someone has a general interest in being the secretary that would like to be nominated. Otherwise, I'm going to roll some dice and pick one of the many deserving people that could do a great job as secretary. So just basically opening it up. Is anybody interested in the position before you get fallen nominated like I was last year?
Did I mention that Mr. Nesgood brings donuts to every meeting?
That's about all I can do.
And he does it well.
Okay, Mr. Sills.
All right, having heard none, I'm going to go with actually what was mentioned just a second ago. So I would move to nominate got me all the bluster here. So let me start that over there. All these comments confused me there, so it's good that I'm not the secretary anymore. Mr. Chair, I would like to nominate Bill Nesgood as the secretary for the next year.
Very good. We have a nomination for Mr. Nesgood as secretary. Can I get a second?
You want? Is Dan and Clyde a second?
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Oh, no. He's conscripted. Oh. This is forced labor. Mr. Weber, we do a roll call, please.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Mr. Kaleka?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Ms. Hopick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Yes.
Aye. Okay, motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, we have our positions filled. Let's move on to the director's report, please.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and board members. If I could just say how much I missed being here last month. And I did listen to the whole meeting. And I won't go too far off topic because my attorney's sitting here by me. But I just wanted to quickly say thank you to everybody for your really kind thoughts and support and the kindness that you showed me as I was going through some health challenges. Thank you so much. And I'd much rather be here than anywhere else, believe it or not. Okay, we have all of your fund budget information as usual. The financial reports with no projections. I did meet last week with Central Service Bureau, CSB, to do a financial check and just see where we are and make sure that our projections are in place. Does anybody have any questions on the financials? I think that I feel great about everything, and I'm grateful to not be the director over the Board of Accountancy because then I think I would be stressed out asking that question. So I'm glad you're not all accountants. But I do meet with the accountants just to make sure I'm on track. So, okay, no news for our board appointments. We're all the same on that. And so we've got our licensing numbers. I mean, really, everything licensing is pretty much on par with what we would expect. Nothing surprising with our numbers. I always find it fascinating to look at other jurisdictions and see how we compare with any given profession. Julie, you have anything you want to add there? No? Okay.
I do, Judith.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Jack.
In past months, we've discussed the status of our interest for a scholarship fund. Where do we stand with that? I know you're working with the governor's committee, somebody, to see if we can get that moving forward.
So I talked to everybody I can about that, and Kurt and I have a meeting in Tucson next week to pursue a possible avenue with Pima Community Colleges, so we can report on that in January, give you a little bit of an update. I'm working that angle everywhere I can.
Great. Thank you.
Enforcement. We have a lot going on in enforcement and our investigations. It's extremely busy. Not even sure what to say about that. We are on par to set new numbers, new records for complaints coming in and things that are going on, and doing our best to address that. That's my biggest issue with the finances is that, you know, pleading for more appropriated funds to fill those two FTE positions. One of them would be an immediate fill with an investigator if we can ensure that we have the funds to do that. So, I don't know, Arlene, do you have any thoughts on that? I know we can't discuss open cases, but let's just say there's more to come in the near future.
There's a lot now and a lot coming.
A lot in the pipeline.
Yeah.
So any further questions on cases or investigations? Grateful that OA's team haven't run out of the building screaming, and even amidst some challenging situations we had this week from somebody coming in and threatening board members, to which I'm extremely grateful for a member of Capital Area Police that's at the back of the room today in the event that this individual showed up, which they didn't. And so, I'm grateful.
So. Yeah, I'm curious about all these complaints coming in, because I'm looking at this FY24 number of complaints, and November seems to have shot up. Non-disciplinary action taken, but see, the number of cases are those mostly home inspectors?
Thanks a lot.
As usual, see too much.
Mr. Chair, is that because geologists and landscape architects currently have active? Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Mike.
There's a mix. There's from every which way. There's non-registrants. There's architecture. There's home inspectors, land surveyors, every profession. A lot.
Thank you.
It's hard to know. I mean, you could see on this agenda we have a lot more architectural issues than, I mean, it kind of comes and goes with, although home inspectors do remain a constant, and we're working on helping with that process to deal with the large amount of complaints that continue to come in that profession. Yeah, I think that's it for the report, unless you guys have any other specific questions.
Just good to have you back, Judith.
Thank you.
Okay, standing committee reports.
Yeah, no new date for the L&R committee, and then we will have a home inspector committee meeting in January.
Okay, I'm sorry. Council, National Council activities.
I'm not aware of anything new with ASBOG this month. Well, they would like Bill to come to a, what's it called? I can't remember the official name, where all the brilliant geologists that can help look at test questions come together.
They won't like me for that. I have so many complaints on the tests from the people who have taken the test that
is exactly what
I
need to go
to Dallas,
be a part of that.
The oil and gas industry, you know.
So I'm just throwing that out there to it's our new secretary now. It's a lot of responsibility. So, but that would be exciting. Arizona hasn't had representation for a long time. So we'll see. Maybe I can host it. No pressure.
No pressure. Okay, Clark, I think some of us attended this last webinar dealing with digital seals. That was kind of self-serving for that group to be on there and say, well, we do this national service, and we'll take care of you. Just pay our monthly fee, and all your problems go away. So I didn't get that much out of that at all.
I thought it was more of a sales pitch. I didn't realize. I thought it was going to be a hearty discussion on seals and difficulties in securing your seal electronically, things like that. So, yeah.
Okay. So that was a buzz, in my opinion. Okay, end card.
Just one little update there. So we had, I sit on the executive committee for the Western Region, or WCAR Region 6, and we just had an executive committee meeting yesterday. As you guys recall, we did have a special session of this board to allow us to open up the bylaws for modifications, a lot of stuff that was antiquated over the last couple of years. So we are in the process of doing that as part of the executive committee, and we'll be presenting that at the regional summit, which is going to be in Savannah, March 1st and 2nd. So that's really the only thing on NCARB side that I have. Unless, Judith, you've got anything else?
I mean, I don't know how interesting it is to everybody, but I did just get a memo actually during our meeting here from NCARB, and they were talking about a couple of changes that they're going to be making on the ARE exam effective February of 2024, and one of them is to update to make sure the questions from the International Code Council come from the most current copy of 2021 rather than the 2018, which was referenced previously. And then the other item is about removing quantitative fill-in-the-blank questions, so just changing some formatting on that. So just interesting for the ARs if that's significant.
A lot of candidates will be very happy that that fill-in-the-blank thing goes away.
Okay, NCES.
All right, Mr. Chair, Scott Sales, I'll start, and then Dana can add anything else. Missed in there. So, but for NCES, we've had a few monthly calls where they just go through a few housekeeping items to keep everybody involved for the western zone. And then NCS is also, they've set up a few scholarship opportunities for those entering the engineering field in the most recent last couple months. So they've worked with a partnership with ACEC for one, and then they also have a new initiative where they're setting up a foundation that's also going to be helping hand out scholarships. They don't have all that ironed out yet, but they're looking to, I think over the next year, that board will be set up and they'll have more information on how folks can apply for scholarships in the engineering realm. So that's exciting. They have all the meetings set up for next year, so I think everybody has those on their calendars. And other than that, I don't really have anything else on this. Dana, is there anything that I missed in there?
No, you definitely
covered
it all.
I would add to the NCWS update that they have been working diligently with the British Embassy and working on a mutual recognition agreement similar to the architects. And again, I just got this email this morning here. I was invited to attend a delegation in conjunction with NCWS about the mutual recognition agreement with the United Kingdom, and I promptly emailed and asked if our civil engineer board member could attend, since they're talking about engineering issues a lot, in addition to regulation and agreements between boards and the United Kingdom. And I just realized, looking at this letter, that they want... This is in the United Kingdom. I thought it was Washington, D.C., so I'm kind of speechless here looking at that. But anyway, they said that, yes, they would welcome Scott Sales to attend. So yeah, wow.
Does he need a partner?
He's a secretary. Yeah. So we did meet with him here recently, right? Who was it? Kurt and me and Julie. We met with an ambassador from the British Embassy, the British consulate in Los Angeles, right? Yeah. Wow. So I literally am just reading this while I'm reading it to you. So, okay. Anyway, that's all I have.
Thank you. Okay, future agenda items. Yes, Mr. Klika.
Well, it's not so much a future agenda item, more as it's a current agenda item, and that is I just wanted to acknowledge our board chair for over 2 years of great service and leadership to the BTR, and I know that was a position that Mr. Gilmore kind of got put into under the reorganization of the board and has done a phenomenal job leading us over the last couple of years. I just want to acknowledge that. So thank you, Jack, for everything.
I'm throwing it out here too, because I at the CLARB conference, when I was able to present, I tried to give Jack kudos, because I said this. He really stayed on in a difficult time when the legislature kind of obliterated the whole entire board. Jack was the only one with any historical knowledge. I was new. I will always be grateful for Jack, that I'd like tease him, you know, that he didn't run screaming and that he stayed and he has managed things and helped ease all the new board members into, you know, a groove, if you will, with this agency and process. I'm so grateful, Jack. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple things for the next meeting. Just a question. We had a gentleman a couple of meetings ago talking about, was it testing the engineers? Is that being looked at right now? I mean, what, wasn't staff going to look at that? He was saying it wasn't appropriate or something.
I think you're talking about exam waivers for structural engineers. We are still looking at that.
And then the other thing was, last meeting, there was a lot of questions about the corner markers or something, and weren't we going to have some?
Yeah, Dana, I think, was going to be pursuing that.
So Dana and I talked about that, and I said, Dana, we're not ready to have it. I mean, unless you disagree, but I said, we're not ready to have a discussion. Who are we going to discuss with? You know, we've got to have a committee ahead of time of land surveyors, review, discuss, and Dana could then bring back and help facilitate, you know, whatever discussion. But not, but Dana being the only land surveyor, right? So that needs further work on the outside. Sometimes if you board members, if you ask for something for a future meeting, it doesn't mean we can have it prepared for the very next meeting. Sometimes it takes a little bit more behind the scenes. So, Dana, did you want to add to that?
No, I agree 100% with that.
Thank you.
Is that a committee to be requested, formed by the board? So the board makes a request to Dana or land surveyors in general to see if they want to be part of the committee to look at this?
It would just kind of be an ad hoc committee that we would reach out through, probably through APLS, the Professional Land Surveyor Association, and work with them. They're always very good to work with us or help or assist, review, whatever. And they would probably help us with some volunteers, too.
And then the only I wanted to ask was this, our first call to the public, was a gentleman interested in plumbing code testing issue? Is that something that we can ask staff to look at? I think this has come up before, a long time ago.
I think a while back it was just that they wanted the board's endorsement for NCWS to create the exam that falls, does that fall under mechanical or, division of mechanical? You know how civil engineering has a breakout of 5 different divisions? I think mechanical has 3. Does that sound right, Julie? Yeah. We can definitely reach out and figure out exactly what it is that needs to be looked at, because he did mention approving plans and signing and whatever, so I'm not exactly sure what it is, but we'll figure it out.
I would add, too, that it's not about the plumbing exam anymore. He has there's been specific changes somewhere, and he would just like the board to be aware of it, maybe to discuss it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that was my understanding, was he wanted a venue probably under the policy matters or some other section where he could just provide information in more of an in-depth where we could actually potentially have that dialogue. But it seemed to me that the gentleman wanted to present us some information. So I don't know if necessarily us looking it up, but then presenting it. And
so maybe we can do both and gather the information and then have it in the board packet ahead of time.
Okay, anything?
No. Mr. Chair, just to confirm for the, because we skipped item 14, just to confirm, for January 5th, that's a virtual meeting.
That's licensing only. It should be very, very short. We just need a quorum since there's kind of a delay between this meeting and the end of January. We don't want people to wait to be licensed.
I believe we did that last year also at the beginning of January.
And then the next board meeting as a board will be February 20-something?
January 30th.
Okay.
Is that something that we could actually post on the website, the full complement of next year's board meetings? I know that Hayden's already sent us calendar invites, and I've got that on my personal schedule, but I don't know that they're going much past January, I think, is the last one shown.
And currently the board website shows up to the February meeting. Typically, we do put the whole year on, but if you would like, we can do that. I would just say that the more dates we put on, the more people have to scroll down to actually get to where the agendas and so forth are, upcoming meetings.
You know, maybe somewhere on the page we can just, like, post just the dates without it being with the minutes and the agenda and all. We'll look into that. It's a good point, Mike.
Okay, nothing else. Yeah, here we go.
Wait, one picture?
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate being chair for a while, and looking forward to the feast here.